Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 25 of the Zombie Girls podcast. With me today are my fabulous co-hosts. All the way from England, we have Jody.
Hello.
And next to me, I have Ariel.
Hi.
And back with us again is Matilda.
Hello.
So today we're going to be talking. God, I'm so fucking tired. I can't even think. Okay, today we're going to be for our 25th. Episode, which is kind of a milestone in only, what, 3 years?
Yeah. just under a decade. We've
yeah, exactly. and for the fact that it's the Women in Horror Month, we thought we would do something a little special, something we've been talking about forever. We're going to be covering all four of the Alien films and talking a lot about, you know, I don't know about your guys' favorite, but my favorite horror movie heroine, Ripley.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Woo-hoo. Good stuff. Are you guys excited to talk about Ripley?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you less excited to talk about her now than before you started watching all four of them?
A little bit. Yeah.
Is the honeymoon over?
It seemed like a really good idea at the time.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like Ripley and I need some alone.
Space.
Some space.
Yeah.
Separate vacations.
You know? Okay, so first of all, I just wanted to start off by checking in on what everybody's been up to, what you've been watching. So, would you like to start, Ariel?
No.
Should we go alphabetically?
No, that's fine.
That sucks for you. You always get the first thing first.
Yeah.
So, what's been watching, girlfriend?
Let's see. I've actually been watching a lot of Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Oh.
Which is one of my all-time favorite shows. When I was a kid, my dad and I used to watch marathons on Coffee. Remember that station? They used to play
yes.
Mr. Belvedere and Twilight Zone and stuff.
Nice.
With the yeah. little dogs on like.
Exactly. So, I used to watch those, but I haven't seen them in years. And then they've been coming out with the seasons really, really, really pathetically slowly. I don't know what's up with that. But they finally came out with the 5th season, and I'm watching that, but they're still not to the hour-long ones, which are, like, the super scary ones that are more intense. But they did, like, they're doing, like, a huge marathon of them, the hour-long ones on, like, I don't know what channel, AMC, something yeah. like that. And it's awesome. So I'm having so much fun. Everybody, the first season is on Netflix now, and people should watch it because it's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't realize when I was a kid is how much in his little, like, monologue things that he does before the show and during the commercial breaks and stuff, he makes fun of his sponsors to no end. Like, he's
really?
Super sarcastic and, like, hates the commercials and everything, and he makes digs at them all the time, and that totally went over my head as a little kid, but it's pretty funny.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That would, like, never happen now.
Yeah.
Like, Rupert Murdoch would be having no part of that.
Yeah, exactly. let's see. Well, and then Rachel and I had a movie marathon last night,
yes.
so we watched a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite?
Paranormal Activity 3.
Yeah, that was pretty
Definitely.
Awesome.
Definitely.
It was so good. So scary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I might as well just jump in because that was going to be sort of
yes.
my
yes,
what you've been watching.
Talking.
So I finally saw Paranormal Activity 3, which I've been dying to see forever. And I have to say, like, it's definitely they've got a formula. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know the sort of setup, and then you know it's going to be, like, long pause, vibrating mm-hmm. music, jump scare.
Right.
But even though I know the formula, it still works on me. I think of the three, that maybe was the one that scared me the most.
Me too. Definitely.
I'm not really sure what it is. Maybe it's because knowing going into the third one that they were going to have to up the ante a little bit, I was a little more anxious, maybe?
That could be it.
But
I think they also did a really good job with the scares, too.
I also feel like it felt a little more evil this time.
Yeah.
And there was a lot more interaction with the demon because, you know, the little girl's talking to Toby.
Well, and I think that's part of it, too, that... this little tiny girl is dealing with this demon. That, I think, makes it especially scary, too.
And they always get me with the garbage disposal trick.
Oh, I know. I hate any movie where somebody sticks their hand in a garbage disposal. I always cringe. I'm always like, no, it's gonna grind your arm off. Don't do it.
I mean, does it ever actually get anybody's hand except for in the first episode of Heroes? Like, have you ever seen, like, I mean, oh, isn't it always, like, you're scared it's gonna happen, but something else happens?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, a movie where they actually have done that, and I can't think of one.
And yet,
I feel like
it is
I saw
scariest.
Something recently, but now I can't remember.
Yeah. But they do it all the time, mm-hmm. and then something else will be the actual scare. But yeah, the movie was awesome, and we were all, like, Rachel had the blanket over, you know, up around her eyes.
Right, put me on blast. Here I am trying to be all Billy Badass, and you're telling my secrets. I totally did. I had a dress on, and I was doing the thing where I was like, it was like slowly creeping over my chin, then my mouth, then my nose. By the end, I was like,
Yeah, you were looking like Jughead.
I'm definitely susceptible to those kinds of movies. I don't know, have you guys seen it?
Not yet.
I haven't, no.
Well, you should.
Are you fans of the series?
Sure.
Do they freak you out? Yeah. Of course, yeah. When I got scared, I had to, like, you know, diffuse with humor, and I was like, I think the demon is the omen. Which is a famous Matilda story.
Which is the kids behind me at the Omen, at the remake of the Omen in the theater, was like, they were so confused, like, I think the priest is the Omen's dad. Like, just totally missing the point at every turn. I think the dog is the Omen.
That's the worst when you get people like that in the theater with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, our famous paranormal, the first time we saw, the first movie, yeah. we saw that in the theater, and there was with like the two women with like buckets of chicken behind us, which would have been fine. You know, like,
you I don't mind people eating do, in the theater.
Do you? But they were so like obnoxious and loud that it was like taking away from the movie.
Yeah, every time.
Like, they had like, this is my living roomitis, and they wanted to discuss everything on screen. We're like, damn.
Well, man. And it's one of those movies that you really need to be quiet, right? Because it builds the tension, and there's not like background music in it. There's nothing to drown out the sounds of other people's obnoxiousness. So,
and I'm very like, get off my lawn when it comes to movie theaters.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I turn into like the total crusty curmudgeon, unless it's like something you're supposed to be loud during, you know, right. like a comedy, like I want people to laugh or, you know, whatever, but mm-hmm. and something like that, it's just like, shut up.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I haven't really, what else have I been watching? I think that's probably it in terms of like horror related things. I've been watching a lot of Friday Night Lights.
You have?
Oh, like, it's so painfully addictive. And, like, I should hate it, because it's so, like, all-American, and everybody goes to church, and everything I'm not.
It's really,
and
really
yet I'm, like, very touched all the time. I'm like, you can do it. You can win the Friday night game. I think I'm just a sucker for those, like, those cheesy sports movies. Like I cannot see Rudy enough. And it's sort of, like, there's a very Rudy thing happening with the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... But this is not the
interesting.
Friday Night,
I wouldn't
like,
have
podcast.
Predicted that.
Although I'd like to start one now. Now that we're talking about it, I have things to say about Regan's eyebrows. All right.
Oh my god.
So, okay, how about you, Matilda? What have you been watching?
I have not been watching too much horror stuff. It was kind of over the holiday season. I got really into just kind of like comfort rewatching. So I ended up rewatching Firefly and Twin Peaks.
Nice.
Over the holiday season.
Qualifies.
It's close.
It's yeah. in the family.
It's in the Twin family. Peaks, all yeah. that strikes me it's is creepy. How much Dale Cooper kind of, like, Stephen Colbert must have studied Dale Cooper so hard for his character.
That's actually really funny.
And his, like, from the hair to the flatness to the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah, it was really great. And then the other thing that I know I sent you this week that you haven't had a chance to watch that... is not quite horror, but I think horror fans will enjoy, is a video by the band Mastodon. And the video's for the song Deathbound, and you can find it on YouTube. And it is, like, Muppet Carnage.
Oh my god.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's really worth,
well,
it's
I
worth
love
watching.
Mastodon does that thing at the beginning of the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie.
Uh-huh.
That, like, you know, talking about, like, don't talk in the theater, take your seat outside.
Right.
And they're like the angry nachos. It's amazing. So, like, that's, I mean.
Yeah, it's in their
wheelhouse.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, it's very much like the train goes, kind of like Mr. Rogers, like the train goes to the fantasy land, but uh-huh. then all the Muppets are just beating on each other, oh, like, exploding, and eating themselves, and.
That sounds amazing.
Yes.
I love, like, the idea of, like, black metal Muppetry.
And nobody looks... There are no black metal Muppets. Like, they right. could have gone that cheesy, but it's not. It's,
So, like, good. Kermit is not in corpse paint. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
And it's not Muppets, I should say. It's more like, it's more like what you would have seen on like public access kind of puppetry.
Right.
Or like Mr. Rogers puppetry, mm-hmm. like kind of less artistic and more stuffed animals that someone's moving behind a little brick wall.
Yeah. Amazing. I'm totally checking it out. So how about you, Miss Explody Joe? What have you been watching?
Not a lot, really. Not a lot of horror. But I have been catching up on Breaking Bad, and that's taken up quite a lot of my time.
Nice.
But I did finally watch Tucker and Dale.
Oh, excellent.
Good. It's awesome.
Did we overhype it, or did you like it?
Oh, not at all. It totally lived up to all the hype that I'd heard about it. It was so good. I really, really enjoyed it. The characters were just so lovable, Tucker and Dale.
Exactly.
They were so sweet. And it was really funny, really gory. But yeah, I really, really liked it. So I wish I checked that out sooner.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked it.
I know. I want to be their friends.
Because I worried that I overhyped it because it was totally, like, my favorite of last year.
I haven't watched it.
You haven't watched it yet?
No, I know.
You know what? You're lucky because you still get to the experience of seeing it for the first time.
Yeah, I was a bit worried because I'd heard a lot of things, not just from you guys, but from other podcasts as well that I'd really liked it. So I was a bit worried, but no, it totally lived up. I thought it was really good.
Awesome.
And the other thing I saw was The Yellow Brick Road, which was, I don't know if you guys have seen it, kind of a low-budget movie. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It could have been executed better, I think, but it was an interesting idea. It's the one about, in the 40s, this whole town of people get up and put on their best clothes and go and walk down this trail and they disappear and no one knows what happened to them. So in present day, this research team goes down the same road to try and find out what happened to them, and they start hearing all this 1940s music and finding all these clothes and stuff, and it's really weird, and they start to sort of go crazy. It was worth a watch. It was a really good idea. I just think it could have probably been executed better, but you know, from what they had, I thought it was done well.
Right. I loved like the first 2/3 of that movie. I thought it was really, really an intriguing thing, and I was like, and I found like the whole thing with the music becoming like really discombobulating, very interesting. But I felt like the end was kind of, I mean, they basically just ripped off the end of In the Mouth of Madness, you know? So,
right.
So I was a little underwhelmed by the ending, but you're right. Like there's an interesting premise there.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And the other one I watched was the original The Fly from the 50s. Ooh, that I hadn't seen
I
before.
Love that.
Oh. Yeah, I really, really liked it because I'm a really big fan of the Jeff Goldblum version, so mm-hmm. I was a bit worried about watching mm-hmm. this one too. But it was so good. I mean, in a way, it was very different because it's kind of this sort of clean, sort of wholesome 1950s version of the story. But it's still a love story, just like the 80s version, which I really, really liked. And it was still quite sad, I thought, and quite moving. And kind of scary. I was surprised at how much I was afraid, actually, especially the cuddly toy spider at the end, like this.
Right, right. Quite scary. I love that movie. I've probably seen it like 10 times.
Yeah, yeah. I was just surprised at how much it didn't scare the shit out of me or anything. But you know, for an old movie, it kind of got to me. So that was a pleasant surprise, definitely. Definitely awesome. Recommendation. I've got the next one to watch now, The Return of the Fly, which I haven't seen yet. But I gather
Seen that one.
I'm looking. Is it the second one or the third one where it's like the weird 60s psychedelic one?
It's probably the third one.
Where there's like a family legacy of flyism.
I think I heard about the third one.
Really? Yeah, I want to. I hope you make it to the third one so you can tell me what you think of it. It sounds so freaking weird.
How are you liking Breaking Bad? I heard on the last podcast that you've been watching it.
Yeah, really good. I was sort of 2/3 of the way through the third season now, and it's good. I'm enjoying it, definitely. Oh. It's kind of got to a point where it's... Because each season so far has kind of started off kind of slow, and then it's kicked off again sort of halfway through, and it's just got to that point again. So I'm intrigued to see how it's going to wrap up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really enjoying it.
Awesome.
Yeah, I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything, but I think horror fans will find something to like in the last episode that currently exists. So.
Really?
Okay, yeah.
Ooh, that's very intriguing. Mm-hmm. See, like I was watching it and it got to like a really dark place and I was just like, oh god, I can't do it. I had to like step away from it. I was getting a little too, it was like too dark for me when they were like shooting heroin. I was like, oh, enough. So, but I need to go back and revisit it. I think I was like watching like 5 different depressing things at the same time, you know. Just like, oh, I need to step away from you and the needle.
What season are they up to now?
Me?
No, like in general, well, how many have they made?
Is it 4?
I think it's 4. So it's the end of the 4th season. That's the last thing I saw. Yeah.
Interesting. Cool, look forward to that.
I've only ever seen the first season of that. I watched the first season when it was on TV and then totally forgot about it. I do that a lot.
Yeah.
I start watching shows and then I lose track of them. And then it's like into the third or fourth season and I don't want to start watching it in the middle. So then it's like 10 years later and I still haven't watched something that everybody's talking about.
And then everyone's like, you haven't seen blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, you're just starting to watch Twin Peaks.
Yes.
So, and I think I gave you that exact comment. Like, you've never seen it.
Yeah. But I am enjoying it a lot.
Excellent. So actually, did you have any other, I didn't mean to cut you off if you were still talking, Jody.
No, that's okay. I haven't really seen a lot, so those are the only ones I wanted to mention.
I actually remember, I can't believe I forgot this, I did see something else. I won, like, what, online screening of the movie Absentia. Have you guys seen anything about this?
No, but I think Sarah mentioned it on the last show, and it sounded quite good.
It was definitely really interesting. It was like it was on this thing called Constellation TV, and it was like me and a few other like horror reviewers on there, like someone from Killer Reviews is on there, and like a few different websites. But it had like a live chat, and like on camera in the corner was the director who was watching the movie with us while we watched it. Yeah, it was kind of trippy. And then, of course, like, people were asking, like, the dumbest questions at the end. God. But, you know, I should have jumped in and started asking, like, you know, feminist-y questions. But at that point, I was like, they were like, how big is your penis? And, like,
you know.
And on top of just, like, useless questions.
Really?
But,
are you serious?
A little bit,
and these were horror reviewers?
Well, I think they were trying to make him laugh, because, like, he was on camera, you know what I mean? So you'd see him read the inappropriate questions and kind of, like, giggle. But, But okay, so anyways, that doesn't matter. The point is, so I saw this movie Absentia, and it's one that's been getting kind of, like, a lot of buzz.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, this kind of indie film that did really well at a few festivals. And then it got a lot of buzz, and then the next festival went to it, it got, you know, like, it really was divisive to the crowd because they had kind of too high expectations. So I want to make sure that I preface this with, okay, I really enjoyed it, but you have to go into it with the right expectations. It's not an action-packed horror movie. There's literally zero violence. It's definitely more of like a suspense movie. It's more almost like a drama with a monster. And it's okay. So it's like two sisters, and they're kind of reunited after several years. One of the sisters is pregnant. The other one has kind of like, you know, a shady past that I don't want to get too deep into, but the pregnant one's husband had gone missing 7 years prior. So the movie opens with her like putting up flyers, the last of the flyers, and now she has to declare him dead in absentia. And she starts seeing him, and there's this whole thing of like wondering what happened. Like, you know, did he get amnesia? Did he, you know, get killed? Is he secretly in the CIA? And, you know, like, and it, the horror sort of comes from that fear of, like, not knowing whatever happened to someone. But, of course, it turns out there's more to it than that. There's sort of, like, a supernatural kind of aspect to it. But the movie really kind of is about the drama between these two sisters. And, like, there's lots of talking and a lot of, like, you know, being upset about where they are in their lives. So, I mean, it's very dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also very unique. Like, the monster, I don't want to give it away, but it's something that we haven't seen a lot of, and it's an interesting take on it. And in the end, it goes really, really, really dark. Really dark.
That's cool.
Like, so after it was over, I was kind of a little gutted. Like, you know, it was, there's something that happens right at the end that's pretty, pretty brutal. So I would recommend definitely, if that sounds interesting to you, if you like something that's really character driven, it has like organ music that's sort of like two or three tones, like wah, wah, with like long scenes of looking down a tunnel and then looking down the tunnel again, but then perhaps another shot of the tunnel. And it has Doug Jones all strung out in it, which is interesting to see him. I'm so used to seeing him as like Abe Sapien, so whenever you see him out of his makeup, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But if that sounds interesting to you,
yeah, definitely.
It's a well-crafted movie, and it definitely has some creepy moments to it. So, Absentia, check it out.
I will do that.
It sounds good.
What?
It sounds good.
It is good. I think you'll like it. Yeah.
And it's always nice to see something different in horror, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. But first you need to see Troll Hunter and Tucker and Dale. Then you can see Absentia.
And I'm allowed to see Absentia.
No, you can do whatever you want. But all right, so that's it for what you've been watching.
Yeah.
Should we talk a little bit about Alien?
Why not?
We've all done a lot of homework.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I know. I don't know about you, Jody, but there's a lot of notes over here.
I actually didn't make any notes. I feel pretty bad because I planned to, but then I thought, well, I've seen these movies so many times, so I hope I've got something to say.
I'm sure you will.
I'm sure you'll be fine, but I've got an iPad to my right, a very, very exciting notepad to my left, and then kind of my sad little sketches that include things like Ron Perlman makes me sad. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. Also, yeah.
Don't watch Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, I love Sons of Anarchy. Well, I was referring more to his, like, weird monkey dance at the beginning.
Oh,
of,
yeah, that's really bad. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh, you're making me sad, Ron Perlman. I thought Beauty and the Beast was a low point. It changed my mind.
And he is not a man to fuck.
No, certainly not. But you know what? When we get to that, we'll have to play the, like, Joss Whedon Firefly versus Alien Resurrection game, because I think there's some, you can see, like, part of how I was getting through that movie was trying to, like, find the Whedon.
Right.
But I'm getting ahead of myself. All right, so we should start with the 1979 film Alien, directed by Ridley Scott, who's coming back for the prequel Prometheus, which I've seen nothing about yet, so don't spoil anything.
I haven't either.
I'm going into it totally cold. Yeah. Like, I don't want to know nothing about it. So, but I'm very, very, very excited. So this, I actually had only ever seen this maybe twice before. I know at least once before. So this may actually have been my second viewing of this, which is kind of crazy considering that I've, like, seen Aliens 1,000 times. But, so this was definitely, it was, interesting to kind of go back and see it, because so much of the way I think about this franchise has been shaped by Aliens, that it was kind of strange to go back and see, like, the original kind of Ripley character and the very obvious man in the suit doing the, hands, you know what I mean? There were a couple times where I was like, oh, sir, I need you to take it down and knock with the hands.
Is he acting with a capital A with his hand? Yes. Jazz hand.
Alien. Well, I had jazz something alien. About the guy in the suit was like hell bent on getting more airtime in the film, so they would have to like secretly shoot him because he would begin like acting in the suit.
Really? That's awful.
Yes, so you can kind of see a little bit of that, I think, in the jazz hand attack when he gets the guy who's like trying to catch Jonesy. And he jumps out, and he's like, ah! I'm like, So
I wish I'd known that. I would have felt, like, even increased hostility toward the alien.
I just think it's so funny that they were, like, secretly shooting him. They're like, okay, we'll splice this in. Because I want to see Shakespearean xenomorph. That would be very exciting.
Yeah, like what ended up on the cutting room floor.
Right. Okay, so who wants to do a quick synopsis?
What's to say about the plot of Alien? I mean, it's like a commercial towing vehicle, right? The Nostromo, and it's on its way back to Earth, and the crew are in stasis because it's going to take months and months for them to get back. I think that I'm trying to remember what they're transporting. Is it like mineral ore or something like that?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
And they get intercepted by this some beacon, and the ship is kind of redirected their course because it's going to intercept this beacon because they don't know what it is, and it's coming from this planet, and they land on the planet and they find all these weird eggs, these disgusting weird eggs in this massive cave, and this facehugger jumps out and jumps on the face of one of these guys, one of the crew members named Kane. They bring it back onto the ship, and eventually it lays something in his throat and bursts out of his chest and proceeds to pick off the crew one by one.
Excellent.
Yep. That sounds pretty good.
I think that's a great synopsis.
Yeah.
So let's talk about sort of just a few key moments in the movie. First of all, I love, we have to talk about the space jockey. Like, I had, because I only saw this once before, I only remembered the ships, the stuff that actually takes place on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
I had forgotten that there was like a whole, like, portion of the movie that takes place actually off the Nostromo. While they're, like, kind of going through the Geiger-esque ship.
Yeah, you didn't really realize how long that bit is.
Mm-mm.
It goes on for a while.
And I loved everything about that. Like, everything from the design of the cave and the and the space jockey himself, also to like the laser light show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys know the story about that?
No.
Okay, so the deal is they had very little budget for this. Mm-hmm. And so like that whole scene with the laser lights, that was not planned, but the Who was in town, so they were able to like borrow their laser show.
That's awesome.
And that's how they created that whole effect. That's amazing. That wasn't even going to be, it was just going to be like the smoke machines. But because the Who was there, they were able to like create the whole thing where he like is like when he first walks in, yeah, and it's there's like the layer of laser. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
It that's gives so it cool. It gives it that awesome like 70s psychedelic mm-hmm. flair too. That never gets repeated in any of the other movies. You never get that, like, space odyssey feeling at
no,
all.
They no, they really change it after the first
they
one.
They really do, yeah. And the kind of, like, design aesthetic of the first one is so...
The white...
There are echoes of it, but it's mm-hmm. such the 70s sci-fi mm-hmm. design aesthetic. Yeah. Like, the high-end, yeah. I kind of loved it.
Me too. Me too. Yeah. I was kind of sad that went the way of, like, the bad... Like, later in the series, sort of, like, the bad fantasy sci-fi... You yeah. know what I mean? Like, with the dark, like, wet everything.
Right.
Although, these are some moist movies. Like, I...
Especially the fourth one. It's like somebody,
yeah.
like...
The third one is disgusting. It's yeah, they just, like, poured ooze on everything. And...
Yeah.
And I already told Rachel, I read too much feminist Freudian stuff about these movies before I watched them.
There's
again.
There's a lot out there.
So I have a lot of notes about penetration.
This is a very penetration heavy franchise,
and like denial of penetration, like Ripley's all denial of penetration mm-hmm. of the ship and herself, and like yeah anyway
right mm. Well, what's interesting is that the first film they cut it, but Ripley was supposed to be romantically involved with the captain. There was supposed to be a sex scene that was never shot between her and Tom Skerritt.
I heard that wasn't perhaps necessarily a romantic link between them, but that because they've been out in space for so long, they just all have sex with each other just to leave all this pressure. And there was a scene, I don't know if you guys watched the 70s. Director's cut or the theatrical.
I went directors.
So you didn't watch directors.
Because there's a scene in the director's cut where Ripley is asking Lambert about Ash and have you ever slept with him? And she's kind of like, what? No, why would I? And apparently that's supposed to be a kind of clue that there's something wrong with him because they're all supposed to be sleeping together all the time.
Or,
so that the fact that he hasn't slept with either of them is a clue that something's not right with him.
Gotcha.
But it's something that didn't really make it into the movie, and he wouldn't have picked up on unless you'd read about this scene that was cut between Dallas and Ripley.
Huh. Right. Well, I mean, considering what he thinks porno magazines are for, I don't know that I'd want to jump in bed with him.
Yeah.
That was an intense scene.
Okay, so talk a little bit about obviously the big Freudian thing is with the alien chest or face hugger is that, you know, it grabs the face, but there's also oral penetration so that it can get its alien.
Well, it's kind of like feminization of male characters through penetration and gestation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's kind of like what's the insect species that has baby and then
praying
eats
mantis?
The partner, praying mantis.
Oh.
Some spidery.
Yeah. How did you do with the spider? The face huggers. Do those bother you, Miss Jodie?
Not too bad in the first one. In the second one, they're crawling around a bit more, like the scene in the medical lab with Ripley and Newt. They're kind of crawling over the equipment. That kind of got to me a little bit. In the first one, not too bad.
That's good.
It doesn't jump at the camera too much.
I find them very disturbing. The face huggers are... Really? Real, like, and the first one too, like when they flip it over and it's all meaty underneath.
Oh, and they're poking at it and stuff.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Because I just think really about gross. Like, you know, like inside a tarantula or something. It's probably all meaty and disgusting.
Like, well, I think the whole. I mean, again, I read too much feminist Freudian theory about this, but the whole movie has that kind of like, and especially in the alien craft where the eggs are, there's this kind of like all the walls are kind of vertebral like, and it's very like inside a body.
Right.
I mean, the whole series is very evocative of, like, inside a body or the body turned inside out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? The aliens that kind of have the kind of...
Exoskeleton.
Moist exoskeleton thing. And
that's interesting. I can't remember, but was the alien wet in the first one? I don't remember it being wet.
Not like it was in the other one.
I mean, it's just
wetter as they go along.
By the end.
Yeah. We don't see it as much, I don't think, but it's really at the end that you see the kind of saliva goo kind of thing coming out of its second mouth.
Right.
But the rest of the movie, you don't really see it a whole lot, so maybe.
I do. I had forgotten how much I love the way that the little embryonic alien moves. Like, after it
gets right, out, right.
When it makes its escape, it's so Muppety. And fantastic.
Oh, I know, the way it just kind of, like, zooms across
yes,
the floor.
Yes, like it's on a little track, which I loved.
Takes down the scare factor a little bit. But
that's awesome.
It is very entertaining.
So, in your feminist reading... You also said that it was like they made a big deal about the ship being called Mother.
Yes.
And that, so, I mean, I'm guessing that like goes that, back to the whole like the ship is the womb thing. Is that right. Kind of the...
Well, and there's also Ripley's separation from Mother, right? Like Mother can't help her at a certain point.
Oh.
And then towards, this is just my interpretation, at the end of the movie, she's singing herself when the alien has escaped with her on the pod.
Mm-hmm.
She's singing herself a nursery rhyme to mm-hmm. calm down. Like there's a lot of...
Interesting
stuff. And then the ship, the Mother is the name of the computer all the way through, except for...
And then it's Father.
And then it's Father.
Yeah.
When it's the military
ship. When we got to the Father thing, I was like, oh, such bad writing. Oh, I can just see them like, it'll be so deep. We'll mirror the Mother in the first film by creating Father.
I know. And I was like, please don't let there be a kind of like action moment about like, Father isn't here. And of course there was.
Of course there was.
Father, help me. Oh, yeah, it was bad.
Oh, so bad. Okay, so what about now? Ripley as the character originally was written. I mean, the characters were sort of written unisex, and they sort of envisioned a male character until Sigourney Weaver got cast, and this obviously was the movie that kind of like made her, like you know, launched her career. And she's since become like obviously for like us horror geeks, sort of the feminist icon of the genre. Because unlike as much as okay, now to be fair, I have to admit, I just watched this amazing documentary called Misrepresentation. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet. I've heard about it.
Oh, it's so good. But it's like very like, I'm like, oh, my dander is up. It's all about how like, you know, the media and portrays women and how that and the effects sort of that has on self-esteem and all kinds of stuff. And one of the things that they talk about in this and that I think is why she's such an amazing character is that now there's like the female action hero and I'm guilty of like loving them, you know. But they're basically, like, they're, like, the action fuck toy.
They're hyper-sexualized.
Like, they're supposedly empowered because they're, like, women of action. But, you know, they're still, like, first and foremost completely fuckable and, like, decked out in head-to-toe.
Like Tomb Raider, you know, where she's got the short shorts and the big boobs and long hair and...
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I think that's why I actually loved the Hit Girl character. Mm-hmm. In the movie a few years ago. What movie was that?
Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
Because she was the first non-sexualized female action hero I had seen in so long.
That's a good point.
And, like, I'm not mad at sexualizing somebody if somebody wants to do that, but they're kind of like...
But it's nice to have a different...
Yeah.
Something, like, a different representation. Like,
Like, I'm anxious to talk about, like, why Ripley has to have panty time all the time at the end of the movies.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, okay, so the thing is with Ripley, I think, I think we definitely need to go there, is that, and maybe this is just me, but I don't think so, but, like, until later in this franchise, they have her, she's very, like, almost unisex, or asexual, in terms of, like, her clothing is very, like, militaristic,
Or just, like, bland uniforms and nothing clings to her body. You don't even really see that she has, like, a real female form for most of the movies. And her hair is either bald or really short cut. Yeah. She doesn't wear makeup at all. And, they don't, like, over-sexualize her in any way. And you never see her naked. You know, even in...
Well, you do in the fourth one, kind of.
When?
Well, she has, like, the see-through thing on.
Oh, yeah.
And then you also see her weird, like, the mutant alien boobs and stuff, but I think the point of all this is, like you said, it's fine, you know, for people to be sexualized sometimes, is that it never made her less valid a heroine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was not something that, like, until you look at it from the perspective of, like, modern action heroes, like, it's not even something, a factor that you think about with her. You know what I mean? Like, she's still strong and appealing and interesting and compelling.
You don't feel like you're missing out on anything.
Right, exactly. Whereas yeah. now it's like almost like studios feel like you have to make, you know, you have to look like Elektra in order to
right,
have
right.
any sort of draw. And yet she here she is like kind of the queen of action heroes and completely kind of flies in the face of the way that female action heroes are portrayed now. I guess is my point.
Mm-hmm.
My very long, circuitous way of getting there.
and many there are a couple feminist writers who talk about her as the original last girl.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, that she, you know, in all ways, that kind of, she's the person who doesn't make the choices that everybody else makes.
Yeah. Yeah, like in the first one when the captain is like telling her, let him back on the ship, yeah. and she's saying, no, I won't do it. Obviously, somebody else opens the door for her, but she's willing to make the hard choices that nobody else will make.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then she immediately takes on leadership roles in each of the movie. You know, mm-hmm. there are all these men around, but she's the one that jumps in and knows how to get the job done and is willing to take responsibility for people's lives.
Uh-huh.
That, I mean, that's why she's so awesome too.
Right. I had actually forgotten the whole thing about her, you know, not letting them in.
Yeah, she,
you know what I mean?
Do
usually
it.
Somebody like your lead character makes poor decisions and mm-hmm. then makes the right decision
yeah.
after kind of like being in the situation where she from the jump is making all, I mean, Ash undermines her every step of the way
mm-hmm.
and so does the captain to a certain extent. But she, from the beginning, she's, like, sticking to protocol. She's making the right choices. So it's not, like what Sarah would call, like, the dumb bitch
right.
genre where, like, one person yeah. makes bad decisions and everybody fucking dies.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. In the first one, there's very much this kind of, like, it looks like it was really written to be a world where there was much more gender parity.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. People are flying, you know, women are flying the plane, or piloting, and there's... There's just a very even distribution and everybody has the same kind of uniform and everybody
yep.
wears the same kind of underwear, it looks like. I mean, there's just that kind of very unisex thing about the way that gender is in that
mm-hmm.
world. And then by two, because it's 1986, like, that is out the window.
Right. But still, it's better in two than it is in any of the later ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two is still pretty good.
Because
compared
now,
to,
two,
like, four.
Yeah. Well, two, I mean, leading up to that, I guess James Cameron had everybody read the Starship Troopers books, you know, which is, and again, is another science fiction where you have a lot of gender parity. But you're right. I mean, by the 80s, you know.
Well, they have to have, you know, somebody there to be the sexist, racist, whatever.
Like, and who better than Bill Paxton?
It's just like, did he play other things in the 80s than that guy?
Not that I can think of.
Like, that's Chet from Weird Science.
Yeah.
On a shit in space.
Yeah. And then, let's see, he was in Near Dark, and I think he was a similar character, because he was, like, the crazy one in Near Dark. And those are, like, the three Bill Paxton 80s movies I can
yeah.
think of.
Yeah. You just want to smack him through the whole movie.
Oh, I love him now.
Yeah. I mean,
I
you sort of have that, like...
Are you crazy?
Yeah. Well, he's very entertaining, but... You just kind of be like, wake up, you know, shut up. What are you thinking?
Uh-oh, we've got her PC dander up now.
But anyways, back to the first movie. I had forgotten, because I hadn't seen it in probably like 5 years or something, that she was so in control and making the right decisions from the very start. Like, I didn't remember that at all. And I was really impressed by the way they portrayed her character in that first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And even at the end, when you were bringing up the fact that in each of the movies, pretty much, maybe not the fourth one, but she, like, ends up back at the ship, you know, trying to escape and takes off her clothes and ends up in her underwear to get back in the little pod thing. What is your opinion on that, before I say anything?
I don't know. I mean, I can't tell, you know, because I was also watching it, like, just going back in the womb.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah.
We go back to the womb before mother takes us out again next time. Or,
yeah.
I was talking to somebody who said that they were kind of annoyed by that because you don't... I mean, you see her in her underwear in the beginning, too, when they're getting out of the pod, but that you know, you don't need that to be there. But I actually didn't mind it. I mean, she's wearing, like, kind of flappy drawers, and, you know, you see,
yeah.
it's not...
it's true.
It's not like she's wearing a thong or something. There's nothing really sexual about it, and for me, it didn't bother me. But I also... I read an article online where they were talking about the fact that at the end of... Like, during the movies, she... basically has no gender, right? You don't have to see it. But at then at the end, it's like she takes off her clothes, reminding everybody that she is a woman. She accomplished all of this, and she's a woman. You know, I don't know, but I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I guess because we see her in a different light at the very end when she's looking after the cat and she's sort of saying goodnight to the cat. And, and she's kind of got this caring nature,
right,
but
more
also
maternal
a sort of a vulnerable nature as well because she's stripped, you know.
Right, exactly.
I kind of didn't know what to think about it.
Yeah.
When I watched it, I just brought it up with some. I kind of didn't know what to think about it. It didn't make me feel too much, but then it was a pattern.
Right.
Well, I actually, it didn't really bother me because I read, you know, not that, you know, seeing a woman in her underwear bothers me, but it didn't strike me as exploitative, I guess is what I'm going to say.
No, not at all.
Because I felt like it was, like Jody said, it was more about expressing vulnerability, because once she saw the alien, we didn't see her duke it out in the chonitos, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She got herself, she put on her action pants, you know, and
went
back to work.
But, right, she doesn't get, like, wet and ripped.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In the chonitos. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like, you know, like, and that whole scene. I loved that whole scene at the end. Of the movies, I mean, definitely, I think the one that's the most horror movie of them is the third one. But that first one, I feel, is the most really successfully suspenseful film.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And there's something about that. The movie is not. There's very few moments where there's, like, actual quick movement on screen, you know? And the most effective parts of that film, I think, are the slowest moving moments like that, where she, you know, where she's creeping into the suit and creeping towards it to you know, release the latch or whatever that jettisons the jerk into space.
But singing the lullaby. Yeah.
Yes, and lullaby, of course. But, and also, even the part where, like, the captain, when the captain gets it, and he's, like, stuck in the air ducts, and it's sort of like a slow-paced moment, but it's that creeping dread.
Very effective.
The scariest part for me in the movie is when they realize the face hug has come off Kane, but they don't know where it is, and they go into the room, and they're just all looking around, three of them, and it could be anywhere. And the camera's just still. It's kind of on the floor in the corner, just looking at them all very slowly. Looking
it's not moving around, like, following each of their eyes or something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
really
I agree.
Creepy,
anytime
really
there's a loose face hugger, I'm on the edge of my seat, because that is, like, seriously, like, my worst nightmare. How big is that fucking thing? And it's like
huge,
spidery, and also like finger phalange-ish. It's just ooh, I hate it. And then
it's
underneath,
like,
it's all
tail.
Meaty. It's just a bad
combination. And Rachel does not do well with spiders.
No. I, at one point in the fourth, I thought Ariel would, or not Ariel, Jody would appreciate it, because I know I did, when he, like, turns around and sees a spider and shoots it. I'm like, appropriate response! Perfectly acceptable level of retaliation.
That was one of, like, two good things about the fourth movie.
Yeah.
That and the basketball scene.
Right.
The basketball. Well, yeah, we gotta talk about that. So I think it's probably fair to say we all have pretty positive feelings about the first movie.
I love the first one.
Definitely.
I do too.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, so high recommendation. Not that anybody out there hasn't already seen it.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to go back and revisit it, because, in, you know, I would have thought, you know, I've seen these movies, you know, but having gone back, I realized how much of it I had forgotten and how much I enjoyed seeing it again. So
definitely,
if it's been a while since you've seen Alien, definitely go back. Read a little Freudian feminist literature and get a whole new experience.
That's right. It references the Men, Women, and Chainsaws book.
Mm-hmm.
She apparently wrote quite a bit about it, although I don't remember.
That's just some, she sent a link.
Oh, okay. I don't remember. I haven't read that book in years, so I don't remember exactly what she talked
about.
It's
your copy sitting on my shelf that's about halfway read.
but there's some really interesting stuff in there.
There's a lot about penetration in there.
There's a lot about penetration.
Penetration's a big topic.
And eyes, and kind of like castration anxiety of male gaze through taking out the eyes in horror. And so I kept
that
waiting
happens
for
in one of these too. Like, I think maybe the first person that gets it that walks into a fan in the third one, doesn't he get an eye taken out?
Yeah.
I don't
I don't remember anything with eyes in these movies.
I mean, it's just that one specific
moment.
That always freaks me out in horror movies, though. I don't like people getting stabbed in the eye or anything like that. That's always one of those moments where I'm like, ah.
That just reminded me of the other thing I was going to talk about at the opening, and I'm not going to go super deep into it, but I finally played through Dead Space 2. And this is totally lost on you ladies. I don't know. Have you played... I know you're not a big horror games person, Jody, but have you played any of the Dead Space games?
I tried to play the first one, but because it's like a console to PC sort of conversion, the controls didn't really work properly, and I didn't really get on with it very well, so I didn't get very far.
That sucks. Well, it's actually appropriate because the games are so heavily influenced by the genre. It's like space horror. It's like this guy who's on a ship, and there's these things that are called necromorphs that, like, basically invade bodies and turn them into these, like, grotesque, like, monsters that you have to, using this, like, laser, not laser, but, like, a... It's kind of like a laser gun that, like, you have to cut off their limbs. You have to, that's how you kill them. You have to, like, actually cut them to pieces. But there is the most horrific eye violence scene in the second one where you, like, it's at the end, towards the end of the game, and you have to go and you're, like, you're on this whole journey or whatever. Big, long story. But you, your character lays down in this thing, and you have to line the laser up with his eye, and he keeps moving his eyes because he's nervous. And then once the you line it up, then you have to drill the needle into his eye. Oh. It's so gnarly! But anyways, that was my little... That is a fucking fantastic game, though. It's so brutal. Like, there's this whole thing where you go through a school... And there's all these, like, babies that explode and children that have long fingers you have to chop up, like, in the nursery room. And, it's amazing. I don't know if Dead Space 2 is any better on PC, but you don't have to play the first game to play the second game, Jody. Okay. It is amazeballs. So good. Okay, back to Alien.
How do you guys feel about the comparison between Ripley and Lambert as the other... female character in this movie?
You know, actually, I think Lambert makes a really good counterpoint, because where Ripley kind of never loses her cool,
Lambert loses
is like, you know, like zero to hysterical in no time.
Yeah, it's true. But also, I don't think she's unreasonably hysterical.
No, she's not. I mean, I think a lot of people would react just the way she reacts, you know?
Yeah, and she's totally got the right idea. She's like, I'm fucking getting off the ship and going into the shuttle. And that's exactly what is the right thing to do at the end of the movie. And, because I think a lot of people don't like her because she screams and she's very vocal about how much she doesn't like it and everything like that. And it can get kind of annoying to watch, I suppose. But I think it's perfectly justified, her behavior, because I'd be just as scared as she is.
And she's not like a wimp or anything. I mean, I think that she's really making smart choices.
I think it's just hard to stand next to Ripley.
Yeah, that's very
You know what I mean?
But she's certainly not as hysterical as Hudson in Aliens. Right. He's the hysteric
one. Yeah, but you're right. I don't think that she's unreasonable, and I don't think that she's unjustified in her hysteria. I think if you have you know, an alien running around your ship offing your teammates or whatever, you're gonna get a little hysterical.
Just a smidge.
But, you know what we didn't talk about, though, was the Ash versus Ripley face-off that I think is pretty, I mean, like, I was watching it, and I remember that Ash was, you know, a synthetic, but I was like, he's the worst! He sucks so bad. I had forgotten that he was, like, in on it. You know what I mean? I was just like, that's, like, the worst freaking synthetic ever. Like, he makes all the wrong choices. He opens the door against her orders. You know, he keeps the, you know what I mean? Like, he stops them from getting the alien when it's running away. Like, he continually provides, like, roadblocks. And I think it's well done, because until you know he's actually in on it, you just think he's making poor decisions.
Yeah, you just think he's kind of a bonehead a little bit.
Right. Like, I don't feel like it's telegraphed that he's, like, knows that they're expendable.
Yeah. Right. I thought the scene was a bit clumsy, though. The one where he attacks her.
Right.
Watching it back now after so long, it kind of stood out compared to the rest of the movie. It's kind of clumsy and kind
The magazine.
Well, why didn't he just use his robo strength to kill her? Why go for the magazine?
Like, smash her face in with his hand.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could probably explain it away by saying that he's malfunctioning and his you know, like, his programming is all off and he doesn't really know what he's doing. I guess you could sort of explain it away in that way. But just the whole bit with, and then Parker comes in and tries to get him off, and it just seems a bit. Yeah, I can't think of any other word to describe it, but clumsy.
Yeah, I think that's the right word.
Yeah.
Also clumsy, the animatronics of his face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the cuts back between Ian Holm and, and rubber Ian Holm.
Yeah.
I was like, there's some very dodgy special effects throughout this series, I have to say.
But I didn't remember that until we were, until rewatching them.
But I guess it was 1979.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty awesome.
We'll let them have a pass for the first movie. Later, not so much. All right. So you guys want to talk about the sequel? My favorite.
Well, then why don't you do the synopsis, Rachel?
How dare you? How dare you turn against me? I can do it. Okay. Where's my notes? I mean, God, not that I need notes for this. I've seen it a billion times. Okay, so this was the 1986 sequel to Alien. Aliens. Because now instead of facing off with one alien, there's going to be lots of them. So the film opens up, the previous film ends with Ripley sort of putting herself on autopilot when she's hoping she's going to run into someone who will, pull her out of stasis and she can get back to Earth that way.
Yeah.
So the film opens with them, or with her being found, and it's like sort of like space pirates are thinking they're going to be able to salvage the ship, and they discover that she's inside, and she gets taken back to the headquarters of, I can't think of the name of the company now. It's just like YM, whatever. They take her back there, and they debrief her, and she's telling them about these aliens, and they're like, yes, acid for blood, aliens, killed off your crew, whatever. And they're really angry with her for blowing up the ship, because, all that ore was on there, and the ship itself, it was like millions and billions and trillions of dollars down the drain.
Not to interrupt your synopsis, there's something later in the movie where you can tell it's an 80s movie because they talk about the colony and they're like, this is a multi-million dollar installation.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Like the whole town.
Yes. Yeah.
A multi-million dollar
one. The terraforming town. Yeah. Right.
Not just
a we couldn't even afford that to get Iraq,
Yeah, exactly.
And that's here. It's already terraformed. So, not that we got Iraq, but that's another story. Another podcast. So she kind of gets demoted and she like becomes like the power loader lady and she's kind of living her life with Jonesy. And in the theatrical cut, this is a very abbreviated thing. Like she wants someone to go and destroy what's left of the eggs and she wants to live her life. And she kind of gets recruited and pulled back into what, when this planet that had been terraformed on the planet where the aliens, they first encountered the aliens, Everybody's gone missing. Now, in the director's cut, there's a little more to it. You find out that Ripley had a daughter. She's been in space 70 years, and her daughter has 57 died.
57 years.
57 years?
Yeah.
Oh, I must have watched the director's cut at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, so she has a daughter that died, and
see the family.
Newt with see how, and this is something we can discuss what we think about if this hurts or helps the film. But you actually kind of see how this, this terraformed city gets destroyed because Newt and her family go on like a little jaunt out to the egg farm where they get a facehugger and bring it back. And it also has, back to, the cheesy 80s city with the captain from, nerd alert, from, what's that show? Red Dwarf. Has the captain from Red Dwarf.
Oh, yeah.
The really bad, American captain.
Yeah.
And so you get to meet Newt's family in the director's cut. Anyways, so once that happens, they decide to deploy a group of colonial marines to investigate, and they bring Ripley along kind of against her will, but she finally sort of gives in.
They tell her that if she goes, they're one, going to kill all the aliens, which is what she wants, and that they'll need her expertise, and two, that she'll get her pilot license back.
Right, that's right, because she's been totally demoted through this.
Yeah.
So she ends up going with them, and of course, all hell breaks loose. There's a group of the Marines, which are awesome, including Vasquez!
Yes!
And of course, Bill Paxton is the, famous Hudson, with all the best lines. Game over, man! Game over! So,
And through this process, she again takes on the leadership role and helps them sort of somewhat defeat the aliens. Along the way, she meets Newt. There's like a whole mother-daughter relationship that builds there. And we're introduced to the concept of the queen alien. And so they have the like the mama versus mama battle royale at the end. Mm-hmm. Begins with a flamethrower and ends with a power loader. Yeah. How fucking butch is that? I love it! Yeah. And the film closes out with her, Newt, her kind of pseudo-love interest, Hicks, and half of Bishop sailing off into the sky, never to be heard from again, except for in Alien 3. So that's like a very, very, very quick synopsis. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's seen the movie. You don't really need me to go into everything about it. But should we talk about some things that we like about it, or how do you want to tackle this?
This is your favorite. Do you want to talk about why it's your favorite?
Sure. This, to me, is like, it's somehow, like, it's lightning in a jar. It's like the perfect combination of things that I like. Like, it is, we've got Ripley, who in this, I think this is the movie where she really comes into her own. I mean, and she feels, having watched the two films, I think she really feels like the same character in both of them, mm-hmm. but now just like slightly more jaded. But there's also, I like, I feel like the one alien is definitely more suspenseful, but having the multiple ones, you get, like, a lot more action scenes. So my ADD self enjoys having a little bit more happening on screen. Also, I saw this as a kid, so I totally identified with Newt. Right. I wanted to be Newt.
Yeah.
I don't know why the fuck I wanted to be Newt, but I did.
Well, she's awesome because she survived when nobody else did.
Right. Right. And I just think that this one has, like, unlike some of the other in the series, this one really has the most characters that you can kind of sink your teeth into and really like. Like, you really like Hicks. You really like mm-hmm. Bishop. You root for Bishop. You even like Hudson and Vasquez and all the other, like, you know, space jocks, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't help yourself. And I feel like this is the movie that you can really get into it and root for it in a way that you don't with the other movies. I mean, like, you root for people not to die because, you know, you want the humans to live, I guess. But it's not in the same way that there's the kind of, like, character development. I mean, obviously, they're sticking to archetypes, which makes them really easy to identify. But I think that the writing in terms of, like, the dialogue and stuff is strongest in this movie. And I think it's telling because this is the one that Sigourney Weaver got her Academy Award nomination for. Mm-hmm.
I mean, she does an amazing job in this movie.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's one that did best at the box office. It mm-hmm. got multiple Academy Award nominations, and it's a classic for a reason.
One of my notes was, like, something for everyone.
Yes.
Right? Like, sci-fi people will definitely find what they like in here. People who like action movies will definitely find mm-hmm. what they like in here, and it's kind of the big James Cameron production, so...
Right.
The Queen special effects were pretty phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Definitely. And yeah, you're right. There is a little something for everyone. And I feel like there's...
A little banter. Mm-hmm. Little, like, 80s movie banter, mm-hmm. for sure.
There's a lot mm-hmm. more humor.
Yeah.
There's breaks in the tension, but there's also sort of breaks from the darkness that you get in the later series. I mean, it just is so dark in 3 and 4.
Yeah.
It's so unrelenting in 3 and 4. I mean, I think they try for humor in the fourth one, but really this is the only one that I successfully got multiple laughs out of.
Yeah.
And I feel like I personally enjoy things that are really, really, can be really dark and somber and depressing and brutal, but at the same time, there was something about this that it has rewatchability because it's not so grim. Even though everybody fucking dies, mm-hmm, you still don't mm-hmm, feel... Mm-hmm. It's not that same kind of grim feeling that you get from the David Fincher film.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone can chime in.
Okay, well, Ripley, in this movie, one thing that I really liked is that, you know, she's, again, she's strong, she's a leader, she takes charge, but there's also... a lot more depth to her character. Like, there's emotion to her too. You know, she has this maternal instinct around Newt, but you see her crying, you know, you see her really mm-hmm. caring about people. And I thought that was nice. It, like, makes her more well-rounded and more interesting, kind mm-hmm. of.
Right. But she did save the cat in the first one, so she's, yeah. You know.
Well, no, I'm not
she's
saying
she's
she was
on
like
my
this...
good list.
I'm not saying she was like a cold bitch in the first one or anything. But you see more of her in the second one, you know.
Right. Like, she's more willing to, like, let her shipmates kind of die in the first one in terms of, like, she's willing to let them sit in quarantine. Whereas in this one, I mean, she's picking up the flamethrower and going in after people.
Yeah. Exactly.
Specifically Newt.
Yeah, and right at the beginning when she hears about this planet that's been colonized now, and the guy says, oh yeah, so there's about 60 families, and she goes, oh, families, and like she's having all these nightmares about chest bursters and everything.
I love that scene.
Yeah, so she partly goes, I guess, to, you know, to stop her own nightmares, but also she's like, because of this whole maternal thing that we found out about now, that she's got this daughter that had died 50 years ago, who she never saw again. And now she's concerned for all these families that are out there as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now, in terms of the theatrical versus the director's cut, what did you guys think about the extended scenes? Do you feel like it added to the film or removed anything?
I think the maternal stuff definitely adds to it. There are a couple... Well, the sentry gun scene kind of made the film drag a little bit for me. And I gather a lot of stuff was cut out.
That's one of Rachel's favorite scenes.
No, that's fine, though. The turrets...
I mean, I can see, like, back when this film was released, they thought it was too long. It was, like, 2.5 hours long or something, and that was too long back then, so I can see why they cut things out. And it doesn't feel too long now. But that particular scene, you only get two or three sort of split-second flashes of aliens, and the rest of it is just the counter, the ammo counting down on the guns. And it just feels like you don't really see a lot, and it kind of, for me, it affected the pacing a little of the movie.
I actually thought that kind of built up tension, you know?
I think the maternal stuff, I originally didn't like it, but Ariel kind of brought me around on it a little bit. I didn't actually need to know that she had a daughter that died because I don't think I need that heavy-handed, like, she had a daughter and this is why she's attached to Newt. Like, I always read it as she attached to Newt because Newt's a cute little kid and she has art, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't need that, but I did like, and Ariel pointed this out to me, that because of that scene, you got more with Paul Reiser. You got more of him being the sympathetic shoulder. And you're able, you know, so that when the double cross comes later, it's more shocking for having had him be this really sympathetic character.
Where he's almost like her therapist, you know, where she's talking to him about her dreams.
Yeah, that's true.
And things like
that. Because he doesn't want to tell her at first that her daughter's has died.
When I was watching this versus, like, the original version, I kind of forgot that he was, like, this evil dude when I was watching those scenes. Because
Company
they made
man.
Him...
Company the corporation! Yeah.
I know, yeah. I was gonna say, like, the 80s class resentment is so high.
The company.
This movie.
It's very prescient to today's attitude towards the corporation.
Yeah, that he's, like, soft and he's all, like, business casual in space and he's kind of a weasel and...
Yep.
Yeah. There's... This movie also has, I think, the beginning of what we see that really stood out for me through the final three movies that are all the kind of, like, Ripley as psychiatric patient and, like, strong female as hysterical female that needs to be contained. Like, we can talk about it later, but there are scenes in 4, I think, where she's literally wearing, like, an Edwardian straitjacket. But there's definitely this kind of... that the parts of her that know things are causing her to be afraid for other people or are causing her to go in, you know, with the flamethrower to get Newt, like, that are seen as kind of crazy.
Yes. Right.
In a certain way, there's an interesting thing. And not to harp on Freud all day, apparently, but there is that kind of, you know, Freud thought that, hysteria was, do you know what it means literally? So it's a wandering uterus.
Yeah.
So it happens in women when their uterus goes wandering.
as it, you know, it does.
As it does.
Mine does all the time.
Mine's behind my knee currently.
But
it's on walkabout.
And then later he thought that that this cluster of symptoms that he thought about his hysteria, which Ripley's certainly showing, right? Like fear and trauma and that kind of stuff, was trauma-based. And was particularly sexually trauma-based.
Mm-hmm.
And he renounced that theory later in life because many of the women he was treating for it were the daughters of his colleagues.
Oops.
And so the implications around what that would mean were intense. But yeah, so that was kind of on my mind as kind of like the psychiatric complex as it relates to her character in these movies and the way that she, there are attempts to contain her over and over again.
Yeah.
It's interesting that these things that we like so much about her character, that you say that, are the things that she's sort of being dismissed by her, you know, the other characters in the movies. Like, I mean, they're the same set of characteristics.
Right, and were she male, it might read the same way, but I don't know.
I don't think it would.
Right, I don't know if it would be medicalized in the same way.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. I had never even thought about that. See? Mm. This is why we do this damn show.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, even in the beginning of the second one where they're all saying, like, you know, you're crazy, you don't know what you're talking about, there's no way there are aliens around. You're
just, it's very, like, dismissive.
This hysterical woman who needs to go away.
You know? Uterus has wandered behind
Yes.
Yeah, but it's a female character that tells her that, and when she's reading out,
that's very true,
needs acid
actually.
For blood, and these are your words.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, but then they're all, I guess, fairly sort of, because I did notice that woman is wearing a sort of suit and tie, and I guess maybe that's sort of a futuristic fashion kind of thing, but they're all dressed very, very male, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, everything has become very unisex in terms of the clothing.
Yeah.
Oh, except for her jumpsuit in the second one. Woo! That 80s jumpsuit.
The belt, the cinched waist. Oh my goodness, sorry, go ahead, Jody, we keep cutting you off, go for it, girl.
Oh, that's okay. There's just one little extra scene in the extended cut that I really like is when they're on the dropship and Hudson is kind of showing off, and he's like, yeah, I'm a badass, you know, you don't want to fuck with me, we've got knives, nukes, guns, sharks,
right.
and he's just doing this really, like, macho thing, and then later he's crying and he's like, fuck that, I'm not going back in there, oh my god, with those things running around, and he just switches so quickly from this massive macho guy to a crying sort of cowardly guy later. It's a really interesting switch in his character.
Yeah,
and he's the most, like, macho of all of them, which is saying a lot in a group of Marines.
Right, and then he's super hysterical.
Yes. Oh, I love it. I want to watch it right now. That's the one I... See, I'm ready to watch it again. I just watched all these things, and I'm like, I'm done with aliens. And now I'm like, ready to pop it on again, just because that was so good.
And like in the first one, in the second one, you see that Vasquez and Ripley, there's some point where they're talking strategy, and Vasquez and Ripley come up with the most escalated nuclear strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else is like, oh, all the guys are like, oh, I don't know, and should we, and... And they're like,
just decimate the planet.
Yeah.
And they're right. That's exactly what they should do.
Yeah.
Anyway, to be sure.
So, okay, we talked a little bit about Ripley and, I've already forgotten her name, the woman from the first film.
Lambert.
Okay, so now in this one we have another situation where we have two women, but it's a very different dynamic. You know what I mean? You have another character who, it you know, she doesn't go towards hysterics. She's, like, very heroic.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting. And I would not be surprised if that is the influence of James Cameron, who, you know, despite all of his weird stuff, you know what I mean? Like, you know, he's like total egomaniacal filmmaker. He, I think, is one of the most female-friendly, like, A-list directors today. You know, he was married to Catherine Bigelow and, you know, really supportive of her career. And I feel like a lot of the women that show up in his films are really treated respectfully.
My mom loves Vasquez.
Does she? Oh, I love Vasquez. Like, who doesn't love Vasquez? Vasquez is amazing.
Yeah.
She's the first Butch I remember seeing on film as a kid, for sure.
I think that's what my mom liked.
I think you're right. It was either her or, like, Large Marge from Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, right, or the girl from Porky's.
I don't remember Porky's at all. I remember being, like, kind of creeped out by it as a child, but
That won't change if you
know.
But yeah, when I was reading some about Vasquez, she was on some website, Vintage Butches.
But at the same time, as Butch as she presents, it's very clear that she's heterosexual.
Yeah,
because there's that whole romance between her and the blonde dude.
Yeah.
So they make a point to let everyone know
she's not gay.
Don't be too controversial.
Yeah.
Well, although then again, how nice is it to have, like, Butch representation,
right? yeah,
with some, and have that complicated a little bit.
Right.
Maybe that's just me being too positive about it.
But. No, I think that's fine. You know, but that's, you know what it is? It's good for you to say that because I'm so, you know what I mean? Like, so used to having the other argument just sort of on deck because,
well,
you know,
I mean, I think part of it is if you saw her character and they did that today, you might think, oh, that's great that they're, you know, sort of changing up a little, but because of when the movie was made, the fact that they were doing it is probably not for the reason you're thinking and more for the reason you're thinking, Rachel.
Vindicated!
Bay Area bubble.
Love the Bay Area bubble.
There's another female Marine who, for years, I thought was Vasquez. There's another one called Dietrich, who has a very similar haircut, very short, short hair. And she's kind of like, I think she's a medical Marine.
Yeah. She checks out. I completely forgot about her.
Yeah.
That's right.
And she's only got a few lines and she gets killed off pretty quickly. But for years, I thought it was the same person.
That's hilarious.
She looks very similar.
Awesome, awesome. So what did you guys, I mean, I think, again, fair to say we all have pretty positive impressions of
this film. Definitely. And I love the queen in this one.
Yeah.
Like, the alien is amazing. Like, she's huge. And when she's got that long sack shooting out the eggs, and it's gross. And...
Oh, and then I love that she like is sitting on it, and then that was the first like
when she
taking
detaches,
a thousand motherhood notes about
away,
detaching.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
When she detaches,
physically detaches from the,
to go whoops,
to go
herself
tight.
Off of the egg
yeah,
sack.
Yeah, it's so cringe inducing, you know, seeing her do that.
Yeah. Although one thing I'll say after she detaches that I was kind of in the really kind of my notes were all is when she chases them in the elevator. I just wasn't.
Was it like too human instinct? Or
it was
something?
Too
intelligent.
I don't know.
Oh,
too
you mean when, it, when she uses the elevator?
It uses the elevator.
Yeah, I was also wondering how she would fit in there because you get the sense that she's a huge creature.
Yeah.
But then
when you see her in
the
room, she takes.
Box.
I mean, that head thing, like how she has that big
fin
on the back of her head. Like, would that really fit in the elevator? I don't know.
Yeah.
God, the creature design on the mother alien,
awesome.
And those big ovaries that Ripley kind of shoots in and they just pour out.
Yeah, that whole scene, I mean, because, like, how do you, I mean, obviously more aliens ups the ante, but I really, the discovery of that mother alien.
It's shocking the first time you see it.
And the design, it's really similar, but it just really takes that exoskeleton to a whole other level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's terrified. After that, like, how do you create creatures that stack up to the xenomorph?
Yeah.
Is there another, like, horror critter? I mean, aside, you know, like, monster that even comes close to the uniqueness and creepiness of that design? I don't think there is.
Yeah. I was just thinking, because I just rewatched Cowboys and Aliens, that you know, the design of the alien where they have like the little hands that come out of
the vagina on their stomach, yes,
but it's pretty unique and creepy and scary, you know. I mean, I thought that was interesting. All right. Yes.
Are we gonna talk dentata, by the way, with all of these or no?
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, I have nothing to say except I just wrote dentata over and over.
Oh, with the thing coming out.
Yeah. Well, and the like the lip pulling back and dripping. There's lots of lip pulling and dripping and don't read Freud before you watch that.
Oh, I didn't even need to. By the time we get to that fourth movie, I mean, it's just like the whole movie is covered in jizz. It's just disgusting. I mean, not to be crude. Too fucking late.
Is it lady jizz, though? Because that's what's scary about the aliens.
Yeah.
They don't need male.
Yeah, right. They don't need male at all.
Well.
Don't need the dudes.
That fourth movie is
okay, so then after she gets out of the elevator, I love how she fights with the, what's that thing
the
called?
Power loader!
It's awesome. Yeah. And in the beginning, when they're like, do you know how to use that? And then she does it, like, super well.
Yeah,
they're all, like, shocked and impressed that she knows how to maneuver with this loader, and then
how
she, like,
how do you maneuver it with breasts?
Yeah. But,
don't
like,
those get
in
the way!
I want that machine where you can, like, put your arms through it and move your arms, and it moves the thing. I want to, like, do that.
I know. Why does that not exist?
I want to rock the power loader.
Would she have been able to do that if she hadn't have lost her pilot's license and had to get
maybe
a job
not.
And be trained up to work in a warehouse?
Maybe not.
Right. It was fate. Right. It was meant to be. But
it's also more like trauma makes her stronger, which is kind of a theme through most of these.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, she just gets stronger and stronger.
Yeah,
and
yeah, she doesn't give up. She just, you know, sort of takes on something else and it ends up paying off.
Mm-hmm.
But that first shot where you see her and she's in the power loader and it's like lit from behind, so it's just sort of like her silhouette. Like,
it's so awesome.
Just like, so awesome.
Yeah.
And just like the whole thing where she's got hold of her.
Oh,
and,
I know.
And the tail's like whipping in, trying to like get her in the face.
The mouth is coming out and biting it.
Exactly. It's so awesome.
I just love it. I mean, it's just fantastic. The one like logical flaw I have with all these movies though, where she ends up dispatching the alien through like jettisoning it into space. Is how does she manage to hold on every time, but the alien can't? I mean, I know they kind of have T-Rexy arms.
Because they're all wet.
That's they're
all lubed
up. They have no grip.
Touche. High five for that one.
One thing that I wasn't sure about in this movie is that are they supposed to have come across these aliens or any other aliens before? Because when the Marines are being briefed at the start and Hudson says, is this going to be a stand-up fight or another bug hunt? I mean, are they supposed to have encountered other aliens before, or is this the first time they've ever...
Well, I think so, because, like, in the first movie, they've never seen them before. They've never encountered an alien race, but it's been a long time, and I feel like maybe they're implying that they have.
I disagree. I think they've met aliens, or seen some sort of alien form in the first film. Because there's quarantine kinds of things in place.
Oh, that's a good point.
And nobody's going, holy shit, life on another planet.
Yeah, that's a good
point. You know, their reaction is...
So it's just they haven't seen
interest
this
about
alien
this
before.
Specific creature. We've never encountered this creature before. Not a creature, this creature.
That's a good point.
So I
that's
always...
true, because they're
willing to, like, cut
stuff,
it up immediately and deal with it.
So I think they definitely have... I don't think they've maybe come across something maybe... like fully sentient or whatever, but I'm sorry, go ahead, Jody.
Oh, I just wasn't sure because in the first movie, something that we didn't talk about is the fact that Ash, the android is obviously in on it the whole time, and there's a bit where Dallas says that he was replaced, he replaced his other science officer like 2 weeks before they shipped out, so that made me think that the company knew about something that was out there and deliberately you know, set them on a course that they would intercept this signal from them. But whether it was just kind of an off chance, like, oh, we think there might be some sort of aliens in this vicinity, or whether they knew specifically on this planet there is something.
I think that your question is going to be answered with Prometheus.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I think that alien, that maybe the film will end with sort of the derelict, you know, the ship kind of coming, like getting that beacon or whatever, or shipping out and with Ash now or something. Because knowing that there's
like
a prequel.
Not knowing.
No. Sometimes that's the problem with prequels. They answer too many questions.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see that movie, though.
Oh,
awesome.
I'm looking forward to it, definitely.
But, yeah, I think that was intentional. I think that there was a reason that they came across that. I think that, you know, I don't think that they came across it and then, you know, he went into the, like, weird white room and discussed it with the company, and they decided. I think going in, he knew what they were going to be bringing back.
Right.
You know, because he opened the gate to let the people in out of quarantine.
That's a good point.
Prior to them having seen the facehugger or having an opportunity to communicate with with the company.
Sure.
So that's my interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And I guess my other question was specifically about the second movie, how there's aliens on this planet the whole time and there's colonists, and it must be fairly close to where the colony is sort of set up, to where the other craft is with all the eggs and everything.
Right.
And it's a company order that sends Newt's family off to go and investigate it and to get infected. But I'm just wondering why it was so long. I mean, it was 50 years or so between the events of the first movie and the second one. I mean, I guess it's a plot contrivance that brings about another movie, but it just seemed...
If they really wanted the aliens, why didn't they go out and get them?
Yeah. I mean, maybe they had to wait until the planet was terraformed before they could. But then why, I mean, did they deliberately want to send Ripley back there, knowing that she knew all about this alien? I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't just want to cut her out completely.
Logical here.
Yeah. And it's not something I like to do with a movie that I love, but when you watch it so many times...
I don't think it takes away from the fabulousness of it.
No, of course not.
Because, I mean, Aliens works just fine as a standalone film anyway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I don't think you need to see any of the other movies to get maximum enjoyment out of the, you know, I mean, you maybe don't get why she hates Bishop so much to begin with, but other than that, I feel like it's a pretty good standalone.
Yeah, it does a good job of telling you what happens in the first one without too much exposition.
Right, and going into too much detail. And
to death.
Right, yeah. That's interesting. That's something to think about. Why would they... I mean, I think there is some logic to the whole terraforming thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if maybe, you know, they called her in because she had that expertise. Because, I mean, they literally needed some expertise. And there's sort of like that, you know, sort of the lie that they don't know.
Yeah, I guess because they don't know anything about it either, really, because nothing ever made it back. And the plan later on is for her to get infected with something and to be brought back. So maybe they needed a civilian to take with them and bring back.
Right. And it wouldn't hurt to have someone to give them an advantage.
Yeah, and then sort of under a half pretense of, oh, and we can take her because she's seen it before.
She's also disposable.
Mm-hmm.
You know? She's they've proven that they've sort of, like, taken away all of her, you know, agency to a certain extent. Like, she's kind of, like, doing this menial job. She's kind of turned into...
She's been declared mentally incompetent, basically.
Right. Well, so she's complete, and she's completely removed from any sort of family because all of her family has died off while she's living through space.
Friends. She's just living in this totally tiny disposable. Little apartment with Jonesy. Mm-hmm.
I think we may be going way too deep into this. But still, it's fine.
We're not talking about the meaning of Jonesy.
is there meaning of
Jonesy? No, I mean, that would be deep. That would be pretty bad.
Have you seen that story? Someone tweeted this to me, and it's awesome. It's aliens as told through Jonesy's perspective.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he thinks that the alien is like a big bald kitty. I'll forward you the link. One of my Twitter friends forwarded that over to me. Cracked me up.
Good.
Because yay, Jonesy for the win. Jonesy's like the only Jonesy's only like really survives the series. Because Jonesy is back on whatever planet they end up on and when she goes off to aliens and she never makes it back.
Yeah.
So maybe Jonesy's the last girl.
Jonesy is the last girl.
Androgynous name?
Yes. Like,
yeah. Mm. See, now I'm going there.
So is there anything else you guys want to talk about aliens before we move on to Alien 3?
Just that I like when she says, get away from her, you bitch.
You bitch. It's totally like the lady smackdown.
You bitch.
Cat fight. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although then, is it for 3 that the poster? Did you see the movie poster?
Oh, the bitch is back.
The bitch is back?
I think it's the third one, yeah.
With her and the alien together?
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a mother alien. It just, you never really see it
mm-hmm.
in the third movie. It's there!
Rachel, you said that this was your favorite. What does everyone else think?
I love this one, too. I mean, the first and the second one are definitely
if you had to pick favorite. A favorite, finger gun to your head.
I actually might pick the first one.
Oh, controversial decision.
I would pick the first one.
Yeah. Oh, I'm wrong! No!
I think I'm torn. I can't really decide. I think the first one is the better movie, but the second one is one that I'll probably be more inclined to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you want to watch it over and over again because it's so entertaining, but I love the first one so much.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're different animals.
The second one is so quotable. I mean,
yeah.
So many lines. It's just so good.
Yeah.
Drop your lid and start your grinning.
Oh, yeah.
But it also has the worst line as well. They mostly come out at night, mostly.
Yeah,
mostly. It was funny seeing that from when I was a kid and thinking it was amazing, and then going back and being like, ooh, Newt's not that great an actor.
and I had a kind of mixed reaction to a lot of the kind of more action-y stuff. Ooh. More action movie interactions between the characters and the lightness of the second one, I felt like, I don't need this. Oh. I want to go back to dark and moody Creepyville.
Well, good news. It's about to get real fucking dark. People are going to walk through fans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hot lead treatment. Shit is about to get real. Okay, so I guess I'm alone in my...
No, we all love one.
Favorite status. Yeah. I mean, seriously, I love that fucking movie. So good. Yeah. Okay. Alien 3. Who would like to do the synopsis of Alien 3? I wrapped it up at 3 a.m., so somebody please take this one off my
I've seen, like, both versions now in the course of, like,
Well, as someone who's seen both versions,
I'm so confused, though.
Okay, all right, all right, all right.
Well, I'll volunteer to do three on the basis that I don't have to do four.
Fair enough. Okay.
And again, it's quite simple. Ripley's escape pod crashes on this planet, and it's a prison planet slash refinery planet, like an ore refinery planet. And I wondered if that was supposed to be a tie-in to what the Nostromo was carrying in the first movie, but it's probably just coincidence. But it's owned by the same company.
Of course.
By Weyland Yutani. Mm-hmm. And Hicks and Newt have both died in the crash or prior to the crash.
Ooh.
And Bishop is kind of smashed to bits as well. So she gets rescued, and it turns out that she has been infected. She's had a facehugger on her while she was in stasis. And she's on this prison planet, and it's going to be weeks and weeks before she gets rescued because... it's kind of it's a derelict planet. Nothing really works, and they don't have a lot of communication with any sort of civilization. So it's going to be ages before someone comes for her. And where is the other alien? Oh yeah, there's another facehugger on board that in the version I saw infects a dog.
That's the original.
It's a different animal in the other version.
It's an ox.
A giant ox.
And the alien looks
way different.
So there's a different kind of alien running around. It's sort of more, it's on all fours, and it's a bit smaller, and it's picking off the prisoners one by one, so they all have to work together to try and bring it down.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, now this one was, came out in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
And was directed by sort of a then-unknown David Fincher.
Mm-hmm.
First
movie.
This is his first big budget film.
Mm.
And obviously he's gone on to do Seven, and the latest is Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Have you seen that yet?
Yeah, it's good.
I'm going to watch it.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
How does it compare to the Swedish version really quickly?
I actually really loved it.
Yeah?
And really, Lisbeth is fantastic.
Oh, good. See, my only experience with her was in that terrible Nightmare on Elm Street remake. So when I saw her cast, I was like, how dare you?
No, she's great. And even like the credit sequence, I just want to watch over and over.
I heard it's amazing.
So creepy. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it. Okay. Yeah. So, all right. Now, this movie is sort of famous for having, like, one of the hardest productions ever. Because there's multiple versions of the script written.
Mm-hmm.
And there was three directors that came on. When David Fincher finally came on, he was working with an unfinished script.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
That was a hodgepodge of about... four other scripts. One of them was written by like famous cyberpunk author William Gibson,
mm-hmm.
and there were a few other people. David Tui did a treatment, and at one point it was going to be like a wooded like monastery. Another one, it was like some cyberpunk future where Ripley is a side character, and it focuses on Hicks and Bishop as the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then what they ended up is pulling different things. Another one was like a prison planet, and so they pulled all those things together for this script.
Kind of all three, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was, what was I going to say? Shoot, I forgot what I was about to say. Did you hate that? You get halfway through a sentence and you forget what you were going to say.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing is after David Fincher shot the film, they came in, completely recut it.
Mm-hmm.
He has kind of disavowed the film, and on the quadrilogy, which is what the Blu-ray quadrilogy is what I was watching, he's the only director that declined to come back and rework the film.
Right.
Wow. So he has no involvement with the film at all anymore.
Wow.
Oh, I see. So the other cut is it not a director's cut? Is it?
Mm-mm. It's just a collector's edition.
Oh, I see. I thought it was.
And it's substantially different. Like major key plot points are different.
And it was. Yeah. I was surprised at how different it is, and there's a lot of added length to it.
A lot of added length.
you good?
Yeah. And that was the one
at 3 a.m. I was like, oh God, let it in. Someone, enough with the running through the tunnels. Burn that sucker.
Yeah, but this is the one that I wanted to watch both versions for that reason. So
this is the second time I've ever seen this one. Because I only saw it one time when it first came on. It came out. And I was so pissed that they had taken these characters that I loved so much and just unceremoniously offed them.
Right.
It felt like, you know, a complete exercise and wasted time with the second film. Like, getting Hicks out, going back in to rescue Newt, only to have them killed off screen and just be meat piles at the beginning of the third movie. So, I have, and then also, Ripley, spoiler alert, dies at the end.
Yeah.
So I was always like, fuck this movie. So I never, I had struck it from my personal canon, you know, like, I'm
never going to see it again.
So this really was almost like, and my only memories of it was her falling into the thing at the end with the alien chest, Percy Harper. So it was like seeing it for the first time when I saw it yesterday. So I will say, as a standalone film, removed from the canon, I actually really liked this movie. I still don't like it for the Alien franchise. I don't feel like it's a true sequel to the second movie. Mm-hmm. But just as a sci-fi film, I think it's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, and the whole concept of, like, this prison colony where they all have decided to stay there and become this, like, spiritual community, and it's all dark and decaying. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fascinating, and they're all murderers and rapists kind of banded together. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fascinating premise. So.
It doesn't feel like it takes place in the same universe, though.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's this, like, super unisex, like, militaristic, homogenized sort of universe that the first two films that take place in. And in this one, it's so gender divided. Like, the fact that there's a,
like,
woman on
the chromosome facility.
Yes.
Or something, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's based on, it's not even based on, like, you know, societal construct of gender. Like, it's at a chromosomal level. They have removed this population, you know? And for her, as a woman, to be on there is just so, like, it's so central to the first, like, you know, third of the film.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually that kind of falls away after
once they have to start,
break, but,
you know, defeating
it,
the aliens.
And it becomes about killing the alien. But that first third of the film, I mean, like, it is all about her gender.
Yeah, keeping her contained so that the prisoners aren't around her, them trying to rape her, her sleeping with the doctor, all of that kind of stuff. Them wanting
I did enjoy
to...
Charles Dance's character, though.
The doctor?
Mm-hmm.
I did, too. I thought he was interesting. What did you think, Jody?
Even though he's evil Lannister now, so you hate
Jody?
Him.
Jody? Yeah.
Jody?
We lost Jody.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Poor Jody doesn't ever...
I was wondering why she hadn't said anything.
Oh. Are you there? No. She's... Hold on. Oh, you can hear us?
Yeah.
Oh, our thing. I think our headphones kind of came loose.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
We can hear you.
We can hear you.
Oh, right.
Sorry. Were you talking?
I was like Jody,
over
are you?
You?
How long have you not been able to hear me?
I haven't heard you since I started Alien 3. It'll be interesting to go back and hear the recording and hear us just talking over you over and over and over again.
Sorry, Jody.
Like, okay, whatever.
Like, bitches.
Bitches are rude.
Okay, I'm going to shut up. You speak, Jody. Go for it.
Okay, well, I was just going to say, this is one movie that I really wanted to watch both versions of because I know they're so different from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, like you said, about how there's a lot of interference and a lot of studio interference. And I gather quite a lot of Sigourney Weaver interference in how the final movie came out. But I unfortunately didn't get time. I don't know if you guys watched just one version or both versions. Or...
I think I'm the only one that watched both versions.
Oh, you saw both. Okay. So you
Unfortunately, like I watched the third one right before, like the night before I came over to Rachel's house, like really late. And I watched the theatrical one because that's the version I had at home. And then I came here and we watched the other one, but it was like so early in the morning. But I was surprised like how different they are. And I don't know, you've watched the theatrical one. So when they have the alien that, like, comes out of the dog and everything, and he's, like, running around, is the CGI really bad on that, in that version?
Bad. Yeah.
Oh, it's so bad.
Okay, I think my TV, I was watching it on this little TV that I have in my bedroom because it was late at night instead of our big screen TV, and I did not notice that the CGI sucked. That's
the
how crappy my TV is.
Reveals all. This is the most unforgiving
If
TV.
I had been watching it on our big TV, I would have, but my little ass, like, non-flat screen TV that was bought in, like, 1988 or something, like,
it
showed none of
film.
That. Mm-hmm. I thought it looked awesome. And then when we saw it here, I was like, that's not the same alien. They put a different alien in. Did they CGI like it after the fact?
I'm so confused.
Bad, yeah,
it looks like unfinished, the alien in it.
Hmm.
Like, it looks like sci-fi movie quality CGI. It's
but and even like sci-fi movie quality from like 7 years ago or something.
Right. It's pretty gnarly, man. I mean, like, I could see why at the time it was bad, but if you're putting out a collector's edition, didn't you go in and like kind of clean it up a little?
Yeah, especially since they didn't have, like, a director to deal with or anything.
Right.
They could have just done whatever the fuck they wanted, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you, I mean, I kind of talked about how I felt about the film. What did you guys think of it?
I mean, I liked this one. I like how dark it is. It kind of, the characters almost have sort of like a road warrior feel to them, right. You know? And again, like, I liked how sort of, even though there's all this gender stuff, like, Ripley is still tough as nails. She still takes command of the prisoner. She has this sexual relationship with the doctor, but you never see either of them unclothed. You don't see the sex scenes. You just see a little bit of sort of tenderness between them, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, it's very matter of fact.
It's very matter of fact. And, you know, she almost gets raped, and, you know, the preacher guy.
Rock.
Sort of, you know,
yeah, that's wrong.
He kicks her butt, but then she comes back after she gets up. She comes back and just pounds the guy, you know?
Yeah.
So all of that I really loved about it. You know, still that her character is so badass and not overly sexualized even in this situation.
Yeah, and even the fact that she has sex with the doctor, it's kind of to avoid all this questioning, because he's asking her,
exactly.
Like, why did we have to autopsy that body? Why did we have to cremate, you know,
right.
Hicks and Newt? And she's like, well, okay, I'm on a planet full of dudes. I might as well just have sex with him.
Yeah.
But then I guess he sort of does it to her at the same time, because he's got this whole secret of why he's on this prison planet in the first place. And so he kind of doesn't want her to know about his background as well, that he used to be a prisoner there.
Right.
So they're both, I guess, kind of trying to shut each other up. So that wasn't, even the sex itself wasn't an overly sexual kind of thing.
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. And she's rocking that shaved head.
Yeah.
She is pulling that off. I think she pulls it off.
Yeah,
really
I was
well.
Impressed. She looked awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it makes me wish I could rock a shaved head a little bit.
Yeah, I wish I could. It's much easier.
I think with your new boots, maybe not a shaved head.
Maybe, no.
Maybe I think that might tell a little story. She's put on Facebook a picture of her new docks, and she had on a floral skirt. It's like, 90s fashion, yes. Amazing!
The floral docks are back. I don't know if you've seen those. They're
I
making
saw
those again.
A Hello Kitty docks.
Oh, yeah.
My sister
like,
had bright 32
is not too old
Martins.
For Hello Kitty Doc Martens, is it? Probably. Oh, well.
I actually, when this movie opened, and, you know, it had been a very long time since I'd watched this whole series kind of back to back. I don't know that it's been a long time. And so the way that I felt a little pandered to in the second one with the action hero stuff and the jokiness that I didn't like, I was like, well, that's over.
Yeah.
When they kill everybody, I was like, oh, good, that's done.
We're starting afresh.
So I had a very different response. I had a very different response of like, oh, okay, this is not for everybody. This is like...
Yeah.
Right.
Very specific.
Interesting.
Yeah, this is not a very popular movie for Aliens fans. A lot of people don't like this one, and I can sort of see why.
I definitely see why.
Yeah, I can see why, totally.
But yeah. I think as a standalone, like, sci-fi movie, it's really quite good. I mean, you know, aside from that crappy CG alien guy, like, it's pretty awesome.
I'm nitpicking when I complain about the alien, though. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, but it was almost, like, on your screen, at least, it was kind of
distracting.
Laughable.
It was distracting.
Every
not gonna
time
lie.
It came on, I was like,
because I enjoy the man in the rubber suit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even with his jazz hands
in
the first
movie. I like practical special effects.
And the second movie, I don't know, is there any CGI in the second movie? Or is it all, like, animatronics and dudes in suits?
I think so.
Yeah, no, I think it is. Mostly it's practical, yeah.
And, man, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
It really does.
I mean, I guess now it makes it easier for it to run around on the ceiling, but I really didn't need to see it run around on the ceiling. I liked it much better when it looked like it was actually there.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like they had the technology and they wanted to use it, regardless of whether it worked for the movie.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it was too much for this type of movie. You didn't need to see as much of the alien as we did.
No, you didn't.
Right. It does sort of take a little bit of the mystique away when it's, like, running around. So, one of the things interesting, speaking of practical effects, so, the theatrical cut, it's a dog. In the other one, it's an ox. But, apparently, one of the things that they tested to try to do to create the alien for where it runs away is they put alien sort of, you know, apparatus on a dog, on a whippet.
Oh,
and
right.
They
it does look like a whippet.
Well, I guess it was so bad they ended up not using it. But I love the idea of, like, Fido cruising around with, like, Xenomorph head on.
best dog Halloween costume ever.
So in that case, I think CGI was the right choice. Yeah. But that's the last time that it looks good, you know? Like when it's still all kind of pink and fleshy.
Yeah.
But when it gets silver, it just looks like, you know, it just doesn't look like it's there.
Yeah.
Hmm. Is there a birthing scene in the cut you saw?
There isn't like a birthing scene.
I don't remember one. I saw that version a long time ago.
It rips out of the ox's stomach.
Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. Okay. Because there's a pretty gruesome scene with a dog. It's spliced in with the funeral scene. There's lots of guts and lots of other, you know.
Yeah, in this one it's spliced in with the funeral scene too.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay.
But it's a little bit different.
I think I chose
when
the
dog is still alive in that one, you know, and he comes and he's like trying to figure out what's wrong with it, and you see the marks on the side of its head from the finger part of the, you know, spider alien.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
It was so sad.
Yeah, it really is, and it looks like his teeth are kind of missing, and I wondered what happened. Like, maybe he put up a fight, and maybe he bit the face hugger, and he got a bit of acid on his face or something. I wasn't sure.
Oh, I don't like that.
Because, like, when it was on the humans, it was able to come off without, like, damaging their skin, you know, but the dog, all its fur was missing in the places where the fingers were. I wasn't sure if that was just to sort of telegraph to us that the thing had been on it, or
I don't know
what.
I also just think that this movie, like, it didn't pull punches, you know what I mean, like in ways that the other movies, even though there's tons of shooting and some acid and stuff in the second movie and a couple moments of violence in the first movie, this is the first movie where you really, things start getting visceral. Yeah. You know, like, the guts, when you see guts in the other ones, they're, like, covered in milky, you know, synthetic blood.
Yeah.
This one, I mean, people are walking through fans and getting exploded.
Yeah. All over the place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at the same time, though, it does seem like we get the same death quite a lot of times in the third movie, with the reaction shot of another prisoner that's there, just that gets blood splattered on his face. That seemed to happen.
Yeah, that's true. That happened.
Yeah.
And this, there's some, it's like zombie xenomorph. It's going for the brain every time.
Yeah, yeah.
It really...
Yeah, it's not body penetration, like, all the...
Yeah.
I wrote thread of penetration much more literal in this movie.
Like, we also see it feeding on people, which I don't think we saw before. Like, there's a scene where they're sort of creeping up on it and you see it kind of eating a person. And I don't know if we ever saw that, because we don't really get a lot about why
how it survives
aliens kill people, if they eat them or if they just, you know, if it's only for reproductive purposes or if, you know, they're just...
Yeah, because you just never see them for long enough periods of time. It's not like you're, you know, watching them sort of live their life.
You're right. You know, the only time you ever see them interact in other films, they're either easy, they're either really kind of... They're killing them off, but sort of not in a lingering way, but sort of in a very quick and brutal way, or dragging them off to, like, incubate.
Right.
Whereas you're right, you see in this one, the aliens sort of like hovered over some of the bodies.
Well, I think I didn't know if part of what they were playing with in this whole movie overall was kind of the unseen threat, both like internal to the prisoners.
Right, because they're like, there's a lot of like, we're murderers and rapists. Yeah. We mentioned we're murderers and rapists. We've done some murdering and some raping.
Yeah. Yeah, so I didn't know if that they were kind of like extending that to the way that they shot the aliens.
Mm. Mm. That's interesting. Yeah. There's a lot of, there's also a lot of a religion in this one for the first time. Yeah. Religion, especially in that longer cut, is very important to Alien 3.
Yeah, and it's like a Synanon community.
It's like very
an est,
right?
Like,
right.
Like challenge each other and keep each other straight and all that kind of
right. And like, you know, the rock like leads his flock with like an iron, you know, pipe, literally. Like, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. When they decide to get a little rapey, like vengeance comes in the the shape of you know, a serious smackdown.
Yeah.
Though I have to say, points for the like African American guy being the interrupter and like moral center around the like gang rape scene, like
I think of
thank you for not doing that differently.
The usual, you mean? Okay, exactly. So, and I do think out of all the prisoners, Rock does the best menace. There's a couple of moments like when they first meet each other and he's like, I am a murderer and rapist of women. And also at the end when she's begging him to kill her, like, you really get a sense that he is a dangerous character. And not in the cookie-cutter, like, lurking in the corner, leering, kind of perverted sort of way. But someone that has, like, real real dangerous potential and real, like a really questionable moral compass.
Yeah. Yeah, because when she asks him to kill her, he's immediately like, yeah, no problem. He's not like, no, I couldn't ever do that to you.
Right, and the only reason he basically doesn't is because he wants her to help them kill the aliens. He's like, I'll do it afterwards, but you gotta help us kill these guys first.
And even though he does,
I didn't believe him. Yeah.
What's that?
I didn't believe that he was ever gonna kill her.
No?
No.
Hmm. Interesting.
I thought he was humoring her.
Mm. Really? Because I felt like when he does the thing with the axe and he chops over her head, there's a moment of struggle where he kind of has to decide to put the needs of the group ahead of the opportunity to, like, take her head off.
Hmm.
But, I mean, it was 2 in the morning. Maybe I'm reading
more into it.
Yeah,
I don't know if I saw that much.
No?
Of, like, him...
I mean, why would that moment be so drawn out, then, if he was just humoring her?
Yeah, that's true.
You know? And why would he even take the swing? I mean, obviously, it creates tension, but if we're talking about motivation of character, I think that he wasn't quite sure what he was going to do till he did it. That was my interpretation. Right. Mm-hmm. But I could be totally wrong, and I probably am.
I will admit that I was knitting when I watched this movie.
That's tough. I like it. Did you occasionally hold your knitting over your eyes to protect your... Lady,
no, and I was knitting lace, so it was complicated. I'll just say, take everything with a large grain of salt.
Well, okay, so I also think that in this, he has like a heroic arc in terms of at the end, he does sacrifice himself, but he never goes Hicks. You know what I mean? Like, there's never a moment where they like have, like, you know what I mean, where they become comrades. Like, they're thrown together for a common purpose. But there's never, like, any sort of bond created there.
Right.
At all. Did you get that at all? Or
But she's harder in this movie, too.
Oh, she's much harder in this movie.
She's, like, she has the devolvement of socialization between 2 and 4 that's pretty profound.
Yeah. Oh, well, by the 4th one, she's somewhere on the, like, autism spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there was kind of a bond between her and the main character, Dylan, because he calls everyone else brother, and he starts to call her sister towards the end of the movie, and I thought that was kind of nice how he sort of embraced her into their community. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, maybe that's part of why I didn't feel like... I felt like there was some bond.
I'm alone.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, truthfully, I don't even remember him saying sister, so I may have just completely missed that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I've heard from Americans, actually, so I wonder if you can corroborate this or not, is that they didn't like this movie very much because it's all British guys with bald heads and they couldn't tell a difference between the characters.
Oh,
is that
that's true? Interesting. Not to me.
No.
I recognize a lot of the actors.
Yeah,
so...
I can see that. There are like two of the characters, like that one kind of creepy little guy. What was his name?
Gollick?
Yeah. And he looks a lot like one of the
Gollick
other bald
and
guys.
Morse. Yeah, him and the one that survived at the end look...
Right, they look really similar. But I didn't really have that big of an issue. But I watch a lot of British stuff, so I don't know if that's...
Yeah, I think we're a bad audience for that because I watch a lot of British
stuff,
too.
But I do know that my dad, for instance, who doesn't really watch any British TV, he always has a really hard time, like, sometimes telling the difference between people and understanding accents. Like,
right.
So... Especially when it's like Block, Stock, and
right,
where they're like swinging it up. But also, I mean, I think those characters, I wasn't really spending a lot of energy trying to keep them separate because they were body count. You know what I mean? They never really they didn't have individual
personalities. There's not that many that you really care about,
right?
Invest in, really.
The only one really care about story. Is the doctor, and he dies. Yeah. And I felt bad for 85. I did. He was like, he didn't know any better. He had an IQ of 85.
Yeah.
Oh, he's like, you know, Space Gump. I felt bad for him.
Right.
He just wanted to go home to his family.
Yeah. Possibly. I think a lot of people don't like it also because... we've said that it goes from one alien in the first movie to loads in the second movie, and then it goes back to one again.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of been scaled back. The level of horror, in a way, has been sort of scaled back. And it doesn't feel quite as claustrophobic because it's in a bigger sort of facility.
Right.
Yeah. It does feel very expansive. I think they maybe were trying to go
to get away
like,
from the alien. Ooh, that pit, though, where the gang rape thing happens, that did not feel good.
Yeah, when she kind of, like, backs out and tries to go in another one.
With the leg?
Yeah. All right. What have you got from your Freudian research about this third one? Nothing really?
Nothing really.
Nobody's really talking about this movie, huh? Everything I read was just about, like, David Fincher not liking. Yeah, 1 and 2 get the real in-depth. I'm surprised 4 doesn't get a lot of...
Yeah. I know, it has the most...
Because 4 is, like, alien orgy. Literally.
and straitjackets.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about from this one? What about Ripley's character? In this one, she's definitely, like you mentioned, she's gotten a lot harder. Like, I think in terms of the trajectory of her character, it makes sense, because now she's
because
lost
of everything that's happened to
everything.
Her.
Yeah.
Reformed bonds in the second film, only to have them, like, ripped away unceremoniously.
Yeah.
And here she is, you know, stranded on this planet. I mean, how do you come back from that?
I mean, this is a bleak movie.
Yeah. It starts with an autopsy of a little girl.
Oh, yeah, and then it's just, like, assisted suicide and please kill me. And from
the scene with Bishop, it's like, he's just a little torso, and he's a synthetic guy, but it's like when he says, like, I don't want to live this way, please disconnect me, kill me, it's like, God, that's gut-wrenching, you know? Mm-hmm. You can see on Ripley's face, like, it's hard for her, really hard for her.
Because but at that point, she just, the way she just, without saying, there's no, like, goodbye, nothing. Nope, she just rips the thing out of its ear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has definitely kind of been through it. And...
Yeah. And she knows she has to do it. Like, that's just it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's rough stuff.
Am I right in thinking that when the scene where she kills herself at the end, you don't see the alien burst out of her in the extended cut?
That's correct.
No, and I didn't like that. Because in the theatrical version, it's awesome, I thought.
Yeah, it bursts out and she kind of grabs
it so that it can't jump away onto somebody
else.
She holds it to her, you know, so that it'll die with her. And I thought that was pretty badass and awesome.
Oh, that's interesting. I remember feeling like that was a maternal... That was the only maternal moment of this movie.
Mm. Yeah.
Was her holding that alien. And then she's so identified with being the alien's mother.
Well, the next one.
Oh, I hadn't thought about it like that, really. But, Like, it's the one thing that... Well, because she says something earlier in the movie, like, you've been in my life for so long, I can't remember anything else.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember anything before you. So, yeah, maybe that was her not wanting to die alone and just... grabbing onto something because everything else has been taken away from her.
Yeah.
I mean, there was this very, like, it wasn't a struggle that she's holding it. There's this kind of, like, peaceful Madonna and child kind of thing going on. at least I don't remember a struggle. I could be wrong.
Oh, I watched the cut without it.
No, I mean, I think she just grabs it, holds it to her chest. And
I feel like it's a little anticlimactic without it, too. Just in terms of the end of the film and the end of Ripley. I mean, I guess they could say, like, they want to treat her with more respect, you know what I mean? To have her, like, have it rip out of her. But I don't know. I feel like it's a little underwhelming without the... I mean, there's so much build up for this thing. I mean, we see it inside her, and how creepy is it when they do the CAT scan?
Yeah,
that's it's, like, malignant, like, foreign DNA. Ugh.
And it wouldn't make any sense without her... without seeing it, because the whole movie is the, like, the horror inside, right? Like, with the prisoners.
Yeah,
like,
and you keep
inside.
Seeing her, like, trying to, you know, run around fighting this alien, and then she'll start gripping her stomach, or
like
kind of lurching over, because she's, and it's paining her to have this inside of her and growing.
Mm-hmm.
And, to have absolutely no resolution of that is disappointing, I think.
They play pretty fast and loose, though, with the time those things take to gestate.
Yeah, they usually it's, like, really freaking quick, and she had, like, days.
Yeah, and not to mention, an alien has already ripped out of an ox that, like, was impregnated ostensibly later than she
like
was.
5 minutes
exactly.
ago. Uh-huh.
Right, and...
Maybe the stasis, like, somehow changed the rate.
Or maybe
because
it's a queen?
Oh,
maybe, I mean, I wonder...
That would be the one difference. Sorry, go ahead,
Jody. In the version I saw, because it was a dog, I thought maybe because it's smaller and the alien itself is smaller, that the gestation period is shorter, because that's what happens in nature. Smaller animals have a shorter gestation period.
Right.
And in the other movies, we don't see a lot of it. It's only really in the first one that we see that gestation period. And we don't know how long it is between the alien coming off and Kane waking up. That could be a few days. So to have Ripley going on for a few days in the third movie, that could be the same.
I guess I've just been assuming it was...
Right.
Yeah, like, I've always thought of it as kind of a 24-hour cycle, but I mean, it could be anything.
Yeah.
Because it grows up so fast as well. When you see it,
Yeah, it's like a little tiny thing running around, and then all of a sudden it's a giant alien.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they never show any of the stages between, like, you know, maggot and full-blown no. alien.
Yeah.
No, you only see, like, they find the skin sometimes where it's,
right.
where it's
right.
molded. Growth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like that, though. That's so creepy.
I know. Oh, and the scene where the alien's head blows up, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they kind of telegraph that when they... Oh, that's the other thing that is not in the version you saw. There's a whole scene where they capture the alien. And
And the guy lets it out, doesn't he?
Yes.
Right. They do this thing. There's, like, this whole, like, working montage where everybody's, like, you know, working mopping the floors with this flammable liquid that accidentally gets let off early. So all these other monks... I'm wondering how they kill them off in the other version. Because, like, 10 monks die in this fire.
Well, we get that scene, and I can't remember why, because they're going to trap it in that big sort of toxic waste dump, aren't they?
Right.
And I think maybe they just use up all their resources and all their fuel, because it goes wrong, because the guy gets attacked and he drops the flare and it all...
Yeah, but you never see them capturing the alien and then letting it out. Like, that doesn't happen in the theatrical version.
So what is the resolution of Golic's character? Did they just show him get killed? Or they don't show him, like, going, you know, like, tell me what to do, master. What should I do next?
He just kind of disappears in my version.
Yeah, I don't remember him being...
That's kind of weird because, like, there's this whole setup. Like, he's...
Yeah.
They make a point to, like, make him an individual character. Is it just... And the payoff for that in the other version is just that he happens to see the dragon?
Hmm. I guess so. I mean, that's one of the big complaints about the third movie is that his character just all of a sudden is not there anymore. Because he's suspected of killing, you know, one of the other prisoners. And he's like, no, it wasn't me. It was the dragon. But he just kind of disappears.
Right.
But the do you get the fire scene or is that not in your version?
No, what ends up happening is the fire goes off. It kills a bunch of people, but they're still able to use it to corral the alien
in. See. And, they just cut away.
Someone leads it in there. Who is it? Oh, it's one of the rapist dudes. He's the American actor that I reckon. I mean, God, he hasn't really done much. He's like a character actor that's in a lot of things. He actually leads the alien in, and they close it behind him, and there's like this extended scene where you're getting killed.
Right.
And then they all kind of like go away. Everybody goes off and does their own thing.
Scenes that makes that version like way longer.
Right. And there's this whole thing where she's talking to 85 and they contact the company to ask permission to kill the alien because he doesn't believe her that they're coming to take the alien, not to get rid of it. Is that in the theatrical?
There's a little bit of it. And that's when he says that, cause the rescue team want to come. And he thinks that they're going to come and rescue her, but she's like, no, they're going to come and take this alien away. So she tells him to send a message to them to say that there's some contamination. And he's like, no, that means they won't come. And I'm going to get to go home if they come.
I want to go home to my family.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's a much longer drawn out scene, I think.
Right.
And then there's a lot more of the religion in that. It's long.
Yeah.
Long.
I mean, it felt longer because we've been watching movies all day and it had gotten really late. And we knew we had to get up early for the podcast.
And it was...
But it was very long.
Well, and this would not be the, you know, as much as I didn't mind this movie, this would not be the movie I would want to be an hour longer than it was.
Right.
Yeah, and that's partly why I didn't watch the other version, because I'd already sat through it, and I thought, I really want to sit through it again and more.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like it, but it is, it's not one that you can just chuck on and just watch.
No. And it's definitely, after it's over, you kind of feel like, ooh.
Yeah, because it's so dark and bleak. And
unrelenting in the bleakness. One thing that was shot that never made it in any cut, I guess they did a whole autopsy scene of Newt. Like, there's a whole... Somewhere out there is a footage of a complete autopsy of Newt that was... Even the guy that did the special effects was like, it's too gross. It'll never end up on screen. And they included it in early screenings, and people were really upset by it. So that's why it's cut the way it is. And it's still, even just the sound effects of, like, him breaking
when they
the
break
ribs.
His chest open, it's
I'm
just like, ooh. They mostly crack like that, mostly. But I'm both So, all right. I think we've thoroughly talked about three, unless there's anything else you guys wanted to talk about.
Just really quickly, you said about how you felt kind of cheated that Hicks and Newt were just killed off.
Yeah.
I didn't feel quite as cheated because at the end of the second movie, you don't see a lot of Hicks. The last bit where Ripley goes off in to rescue Newt, he doesn't have any lines or anything after that scene.
Yeah, he's
bandaged up, and I was even watching it thinking, is that even Michael Biehn? Because you don't really see his face. He's got half his face sort of bandaged, and I thought maybe something happened and he left the movies towards the end. But like, because you don't get anything at the end with.
Yeah, I remember kind of losing track of him too when I was watching it.
Yeah, so it didn't feel quite as big of a cheat that he dies between the second and third movie.
I just feel like so much effort goes into that final like quarter of the movie rescuing those people, mm-hmm. and to have it all for naught. I mean, like, yeah, I guess it makes it more devastating in the third movie. But as someone who just really has such a deep affection for that movie and those characters, I was mm-hmm. just like, really? But I mean, yeah. like I said, though, having revisited the movie, I liked it. I would recommend people see it. Mm-hmm. I still don't like it. I know you differ.
I didn't mind. And, yeah.
But I love Michael Biehn, too. And I feel like he always gets the boot, dude. He dies in The Abyss. He dies in Terminator. Like, can this motherfucker live? Seriously, I mean, I can't think of a movie that he survives.
Yeah.
Well, he's such a moral center of two, and then have mm-hmm. to, like, that's the whole point of three, is, like, it's gone, except for this bizarre religious colony.
Right.
That's barely holding
everybody's
stuff.
I felt like Sigourney Weaver and him had tons of chemistry in the second movie, too. And you know what I mean? Like, obviously, I really like Charles Dance a lot, and I thought that that was an interesting dynamic, their relationship, but it didn't have that same sort of, like, I wasn't rooting for them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess the formula, the 80s formula, works for me. I love it. But interestingly enough, though, no love scene in the 80s formula movie. Love scene in Dan Fincher film. I mean, the fully clothed. I mean, they must have just dry-humped, but still.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's
or they got dressed and they got back under the covers to have their little goodbye moment.
Right, mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Surprisingly chaste, considering the level of violence in the movie.
I don't even think they
kiss on screen.
No, yeah, they no, don't. I actually liked that they didn't.
Me too.
I mean, they go completely the opposite direction in the next movie.
Yeah. That's one thing that I've always liked about the first, because I've always referred to it as the Alien trilogy, not quadrilogy, because I don't like the fourth one. But like there's something that's so, like, it's got such a sexual theme.
Yeah.
With, you know, rape and penetration and everything like that. It's so unsexy and unsexual in terms of the human aspect of the story, which I've always found really interesting.
And it's unsexy in a way that's not like gross unsexy.
It's not ugly. It's just asexual.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she is still very asexual in that third movie, like with the shaved head.
Yeah, and she's wearing men's clothing. She didn't have
the baggy,
weird
monk clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And although, I would not have wanted her to be, like, I would have not been comfortable with her being, like, any nudity in that environment.
No.
Actually would have read really bad touchy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in a movie
be like
with so
the,
much threat
an
of rape.
Asking for it kind of situation.
Yeah. Yeah. In a movie with that much threat of rape, I would not want to have her without clothes on.
Yep. All right, so are we ready to move on to Jodie's favorite? Joss Whedon's contribution to the trilogy? Or quadrilogy? All right. Who would like to take on Alien 4? Jodie is exempt.
No. Thank you.
How about you? You want me to take it or you got Alien 4? I'll do it. Okay. So, Alien 4. Now, I watched the director's cut. So, it has a slightly different opening. And the opening is terrible. Like, the opening for the...
The bug on the screen?
Yes. It starts off like it looks like alien teeth. And it's actually like a bug. And as they pull out, you realize it's like a fly with alien
teeth.
And
it's kind of bad CGI fly.
Terrible. And then he squishes it. And there's this whole thing where he looks like he's going to eat the bug guts. But then he does a spit wad, so it splats
then he,
on
like,
the window.
Yeah, he puts it in a straw and spits
Who's
it at
doing
the window.
This?
Some
pilot
spaceman.
Dude.
Yeah, it was bizarre, and it didn't make sense, it had nothing to do with the movie, it wasn't cool to look at, so that was the point of it, like, there was just no reason to have that scene at all.
I mean, and that, I think, is a perfect encapsulation of almost every moment of footage for the next hour and 45 minutes.
Oh,
but, okay, so, like, in the theatrical, it's, like, sort of this weird, like hodgepodge of alien turning into human. It kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it's a montage of the Ripley clones, I thought.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're 200 years in the future. We're on the set of Hellraiser Bloodline. It's so bad. They have their... I'm trying to remember exactly what happens. She's in sort of a tube that's sort of like a surgical tube. Is that how it happens? Am I getting ahead of myself?
No, that's
doesn't matter. Anyway, they've got Ripley in a tube. It's like a big test tube. Yeah. And they're, Worm Tongue is like cut her open and is removing
Worm Tongue and his ponytail.
Oh, and his metal encased ponytail of space.
Oh God, that guy is awesome. He's always so creepy. Like he doesn't have to do anything, and he's just. Creepy.
I love Brad Dourif.
I do too.
He's awesome. A perfect example of when bad roles happen to a good actor. Yeah. There is not a paycheck that man won't cash. And it's no surprise that him and Ron Perlman are both in this movie. Because
he was good in Deadwood, though. He was the doc in Deadwood.
Oh, no. Brad Dourif? Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. I love Brad Dourif. But he is in some shitty movies.
Yes.
He's always the best part of whatever movie he's in. Normally I would say that about Ron Perlman, but in this case, Brad's got him beat. All right, so they've got her in a test tube, and they're removing an alien from her chest. And you're kind of like, well, wait.
She died. What happened?
So at the same time, there's another ship coming on board. Betty is the name of the ship. And it's full of smugglers and sort of clearance rack Firefly cast.
Yes.
Yeah.
We did the little like figuring out who was who. Ron Perlman's totally Jane.
Sure.
And Wash is sort of the mix of Captain and the handicapped French dude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Zoe is army thong lady with the braids.
Although Ripley is Winter.
Ripley is
kind
Winter.
Of powerful ways.
Ripley's good call. I didn't even go there.
Ripley is totally Winter.
Because I don't know who was and
River. Sorry.
River is Winona. No. Yeah. Well, sort of a mix between Winona and Ripley.
Ripley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, Winter. What's the name of the priest guy? In Firefly.
Oh God.
The brother.
Book.
Yeah. I think Ripley's Book.
Oh, interesting.
Because she's got like the violent past. The mysterious, and then also kind of like the veneer, like the emotional veneer that Book has. Not that I'm really into Firefly or anything.
I thought she was River because she has the like traumatized flat.
Well, she has the weird Asperger's-y thing happening. Uh-huh.
And the company has something inside her
that they have an interest
in. I like that. That's a good one. I think you're right.
I think there is sort of a hodgepodge of things happening here.
I'm derailing the synopsis.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fine. I'd rather talk about Firefly. What do you say we just close this out with Firefly discussion? So anyways, they've come aboard. They're smuggling something on. And the captain is who I always refer to as Dude McDormand because he looks like the male version of Francis McDormand to me.
He does not.
He does so! He looks... Throw a Fargo wig on that motherfucker. He is Francis McDormand.
I don't know where she's getting this from. He is
my eyeballs! From my eyeballs!
You were seeing, like, a different actor than I was seeing.
I'm gonna... You know what? There will be a comparison. I will be vindicated.
We'll compare, and we'll put it on the website, and we'll just see what people say.
Okay. Yeah, but Rachel, 100%, correct. Boom. Done. No need to survey others.
No cheating.
Well. Okay, so anyways, basically it's like they're out in space. They've got this space station where they're cloning Ripley, and from her clones they're able to from blood that they got off of Fury 161 or whatever the planet she was on in 3, and they're extracting her DNA because they want to be able to create Xenomorph, finally get their hands on it. And Dan Hedaya, when his incredibly furry arms and shoulders.
Oh, when he sits up in bed? I was like, rock on with your furry shoulders.
It looked like he had like an Anne of Green Gables-esque puff sleeve on. Oh. And I went, is that too hairy for Exploding Joe? Oh.
There is such a thing as too much hair.
So, I I appreciate that he has not removed, that he survives in Hollywood without removing it.
Like, fair enough. Because he has a penis. He can... There's sort of like the hair, the past.
That's why Jack Nicholson still considered hot.
No. Even though who thinks he's hot?
Bald.
No one thinks he's hot anymore, do they?
But he's still like the cool dude, you know? A woman could not look like that and be the cool Hollywood guy anymore.
Men think he's hot. I don't know that.
Women, I don't think, like, straight, I think men, he's a man's, he's, man.
Yeah. I still would.
You would?
Really?
Yeah.
I was with you with Khal Drogo, but I think you lost me with Jack. okay, so, and sort of the side effect of this cloning process is that some of the alien is in the new Ripley clone number 8, because she has an 8 tattooed arm, and some of Ripley is in the alien. So there's, basically what ends up happening is the alien gets loose, starts breeding, doing its thing, and it's her and this group from the smugglers, including Winona Ryder, who's a synthetic, who was one interesting thing I thought about this movie was that Winona Ryder is a second generation. She's a robot created by robots, and so they, instead of being very robotic, they've kind of like, it's sort of like that second generation thing where they've become, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, you know, like when immigrants come in, second generation, become like
a, she's assimilated
yeah. almost like assimilated into like human culture.
Yeah.
So she doesn't take orders very well. She's not as awkward as like Bishop and Ash are.
And she's able to sort of seamlessly, being a synthetic in a way.
Yeah, she's able to sort of seamlessly fit into society, but or into human sort of groups, whatever. And that's basically it, right? I mean, it's sort of that same formula, and it's like a chase movie. They're trying to get back to the Betty so they can escape and blow up whatever ship, space dock thing, and the government slash company, which, by the way, in the director's cut, there's a Walmart joke.
Yeah, it's very,
the company has gone under, and that Walmart has bought them out, and now Walmart is the big corporation.
It was very strange. We both looked at each other.
We're like, really?
Did they just say Walmart?
Did they name check Walmart? That just What's happened? Up with that? And so they're trying to get away, and the scientists want to keep an alien alive. They want to get one back. I mean, it's the same exact thing.
Right. Except now you have Ripley as part alien, and she's like got superhuman strength, and
so everything you liked about Ripley has now been removed.
Yes,
and she's unsocialized.
She's sexualized. She's wearing this like tight leather bustier outfit thing. And
they've got her, and now she's in the action fuck toy uniform.
Exactly.
Like full leather head to toe.
Well, and she's all like, in Freudian terms, she's all id.
Right.
Right. Like she's no. She's half a personality.
Right.
Like she's all base primitive.
Mm-hmm. And there's instinct. Like, you know, she can communicate with the aliens, and she's pulled sort of that, like, what's not primitive, but what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of, animalistic? That's not the right word, but sort of that sort of alien otherness brutality from them.
Yeah.
And, but does not have any of the ability to sort of like emote and connect.
Yeah, and there's no real, like, empathy or...
Yeah, she's sadistic in a new way.
And she's almost sort of been, I don't know how to say this word, like, exotic? You know what I'm saying? Like, now she's, like, almost, she's, like, super sexual.
Well, yeah, she's, like, sexy feral woman.
Yes.
Is kind of
she's
the,
very feral. Uh-huh. Although I did enjoy the scene. There's a point, and I don't know, Jody, if you can get on board with this, the basketball scene where Ron Perlman's trying to put his, like...
That's the only other scene that I liked, apart from when he shoots the spider, that bit. The basketball scene, I quite like.
Yeah, where she's got the ball behind his head, and she's, like, kind of dribbling it. Like,
and he's trying to, like, get over her.
He's like, you know I like the tall ones. Or something about the tall ones.
And then she does the swoosh from, you know.
Now, have you seen the footage of that? She makes that shot.
Really?
Yeah. She made that shot. And if you watch, you can see the shadow. And it's funny because Ron Perlman totally breaks. But they were able to cut it in such a way that they didn't lose it. But he's like,
I think I've seen a cut somewhere, like an outtake of it, and the whole crew goes, yes!
That's pretty awesome. Yes. And she stays completely straight-faced.
Yes. Oh, yeah. But she just does one over her shoulder, and it...
And it looks like it took absolutely no effort.
Yeah. Yeah. So that scene is pretty great.
The other scene that I like in this movie, which it's kind of creepy, but the icky scientist guy with the ponytail, where he is, like, playing with the queen behind the glass, and he's, like, shooting the air at her, and then he's, like, licking the glass or whatever
he does. Oh, yeah.
It's very bizarre and creepy.
I wanted him to be like, with the second time he hit it and she learned, I so wanted him to be like, clever girl from Jurassic Park. You know what I mean? Like, that was the line, right? Yeah. That he needed to say.
Well, this movie was all mouth, interestingly. Yes. Like, breath is what opens the doors.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it seems like there's hull breaches over the entire ship because everything has, like, steam coming out of it.
Yeah, so it's all, like, dry ice.
It's like this director could, like, he never found a smoke machine he didn't like. Like, everything was appropriate. They breathe smoke or steam.
Yeah.
It was just coming out of the floor all the time, like, up from the floor.
And this movie, I remember, was one of the ones with, like, the lots of lips curling back for the aliens,
and
lots of,
everything,
like, mouth
was
shots.
Just dripping wet. Like, aliens were just, like, gooey, slimy.
Alien tongue as well at the end.
Yes!
Yes. The alien.
We should talk about that.
Okay,
real quick.
I got a little ahead of myself. I wanted to say, so this one came out, let's see, the last one was in 92. This one came out in 97. So five years later. And it was directed by Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who also directed Amelie and Children, or City of Lost Children. Yeah, that one I see. Amelie, not so
I
much.
Love Amelie. It's so weird. I can't picture the same director doing it.
But sort of the direction in this film is so bizarre. Like, there's lots of weird angles on people's faces, and it's like the director was like, okay, everyone, crazy eyes. Do crazy eyes in camera. Do Nicolas Cage acting. Like, you know what I mean? There's all of these weird sort of Dutchy angles and, like, bug eyes. That's sort of how he's expressing fear.
Yeah.
And sort of, like, I think it's supposed to make it look, like, chaotic and sci-fi-ish, but to me it just looks cartoonish. It did not work for me. No.
Very little of this movie worked for me.
Right. Well, obviously. Yeah. I'm just picking this specific part right now to tear apart, but, and I don't, like, again, this is another one, this does not feel like it happens in the same universe. As the previous movies. Not even the third movie. Like, this thing is such an outlier. I don't even know how it fits in the canon, except for that it has Ripley and Xenomorphs in it. I don't know.
I mean, I can see the scientists being company-like, you know? That I don't think that's too big of a stretch, that they're similar.
Well, I mean, there's the big bad.
What they want and
but it's not. Goals. It's not even the company anymore. It's something completely different.
I'm just saying it's like a similar vibe, you know? They haven't completely changed that part of it.
It felt heavy-handed to me in terms of the, like, we have the, like, the birth stuff.
Yeah.
And then she's ripping her way out of that womb.
Right. Yes. Right in the very beginning.
With her manicured nails.
I have written down who is painting the clone's nails on this
show. Yeah. Manicure. Like, gross, green nails. Like, are they supposed to be, like, claws, kind of? Like, she's more animal-like?
I guess.
Or what? But it just looks like a crappy manicure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, well,
she's taken on some of the alien sort of
exactly.
So maybe
they're alien nails.
That's what I was saying. Like, they're kind of claw alien nails. Or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember aliens' claws being like plum. They were very
like a flat.
They
plum.
Look like and they look like total like 80s manicure nails. You know what I mean? Like the shape of them and stuff. They didn't look claw like. They looked like. Very, like, perfectly. Yes. I did not enjoy those at all. Also, the computer in this film we mentioned earlier has changed from mother to father.
Yeah.
So are they trying to, even though, okay, so she refers to herself as mother of the alien. Because she's like, something about her, she calls it her baby.
Yeah.
Baby. Mm-hmm. And there's an actual birth that happens on screen with this film. Yeah.
So, I mean, are they trying to somehow juxtapose that with the ship being father and that the two of them came together to create this life or something?
Ugh, I thought it was more of a kind of lazy, oh, well, if it's called Mother in that movie, let's call it Father in this movie. Yeah.
That's probably literally all the thought that went into it.
Yeah.
What Jody just said is the conversation that happened, and then it went into the script.
I know, I wrote, like, father's inability to contain the monstrous feminine. That's probably not, it's not that deep. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure it is. I was reaching.
Yeah, I think it would be giving this movie too much credit if it was anything deeper than that.
Yeah.
Right. And everything about this feels really kind of amateurish. Like, this is the first time we start seeing Ripley is now being shown sort of semi-nude.
Mm-hmm. They have a sex scene in it, too.
And the Vasquez character has now been reduced to the woman in the army green thong.
Yeah, while he, like, fetishizes her feet. And, ugh. Creepy.
Dude McDormand.
Shut up.
I know I can't be alone in this.
You are the only one in the whole world.
Also, just like, her dialogue is so pained in this. Like, at one point, she's like, who do I have to fuck to get off this boat?
Yeah. It's like they're trying to make her almost robotic, but in doing that, everything she says sounds phony and like, forced. And
well, she even says, like, I'm finding things funny now that aren't, and I'm just like, yeah, that would explain a lot of this dialogue.
Well, they say autism at some point, like, in her evaluation they say, like, the clone has attained a level of emotional autism.
Okay, because she does appear to be somewhere on that spectrum. Let's see, also, now the aliens spit acid. That's new.
Yeah.
Like, I did think it was kind of clever. I did actually sort of like the idea when they were trapped of the aliens cannibalizing the other one to create the acid to escape. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering about that as well, because in the third movie, when we see, like, an acid burn inside the ship, and that's how Ripley thinks, oh my god, maybe there's an alien, and then there's another one that the doctor finds inside when the guy gets cut up by the fan. And I thought, well, if they only bleed acid, why is there acid all the way, like, all over the place? I mean, it's only when they get cut. But maybe they can project it. Maybe they've always been able to project a small amount of acid, because someone else was saying that that's how the facehugger gets through Kane's helmet in the first movie. Because we don't see it bust through or anything. Maybe it spits, like, a little amount to be able to get in and get onto his face.
Huh. Good point.
But it's nothing that they ever, they never talk about it, and they never really, this is the first time we've seen it.
Yeah, right. I took the kind of alien-on-alien violence in the pod, in the cannibalization, to be more like kind of heavy-handed, mother-on-mother kind of, right, because it's queen.
Right.
Right, it's like lots of queens that are in that.
Is it?
Is it?
No, I think they're like the warrior ones.
Oh, okay.
Because the mother is off somewhere else, remember?
She, like,
because at this point they have they've got the mother that they've taken out of her that's produced eggs, and they've used those eggs to impregnate the people
that were brought on by the smugglers.
So they've created these, it's like a pack, and it becomes like the pack sort of turns on the weakest one.
Yeah, I thought it was just to show that they were learning, and that they're a bit more, because they're kind of, all the DNA between the humans and the aliens is sort of mingled in the cloning process. So
that's how it works. Just like the alien learns the, you know, when he pushes the button and the stuff, you know, the smoke or whatever shoots at it, then the alien does the same thing to him later.
Yeah.
You know, like, they learn. They're more intelligent.
I did like the death by, like, whatchamacallit, what is that cold stuff called?
Dry ice?
Nitrogen.
Nitrogen,
liquid nitrogen.
When the guy kind of, like, breaks apart, I was ooh, gnarly. Yeah. That I enjoyed. That was a good death.
It was.
And that's the thing with this movie, is there are moments in this movie that are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is they're, like, couched in this terrible movie. And to be honest, I thought I was going to be the person sort of defending this. Because I saw it years ago, and I remembered the underwater chase scene and being like, that movie was kind of awesome. And then as I was watching it, I was like, holy crap, this is terrible.
Yeah.
And I don't think I picked up on all the weird sex stuff. I mean, I was in high school, and so you'd think I would be somewhat savvy to that, but I don't think I got that she was, like,
having sex with the alien and in like weird orgy with the alien.
What?
Wait, when did they show that? Did that?
She's like, I mean, they don't show her like lower half, but she's like holding it and like getting off.
Guess that's true. Yeah.
Oh, in the kind of, yeah.
I think it's implied that she's having sex with the alien, right?
Yeah, that's what I got out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot.
There's
about
a whole
that
thing, scene. And it's, you can see that it's embraced her too, mm-hmm. and she's embracing mm-hmm. it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the movie was digitally manipulated after the fact to remove all the genitals from the aliens.
Yeah, Rachel yeah. showed me a picture of.
I
what
sent
they
you that
like.
Picture. Did
it's
you look at it?
I didn't see it.
I sent you a.
Can you send it to me?
For sure. Yeah, I'll forward it over
all,
to you.
All like penises all over it, right?
I've no, it's this. A giant vagina.
Oh right.
No, the heads okay. are the penises on those Geiger things.
Right, right.
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 No, yeah. it's the one that's like the human alien thing.
Oh yeah.
It has okay, like a yeah. vagina that starts at the belly button.
And it has like little boobs and
it's so, very okay. upsetting.
I'm gonna need to talk about the unfortunate boobs of the alien progeny.
Oh yes, okay. absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's go there then. Like, okay. So at some point during the escape, she sees the lab where they had like the test tube lab. Where she sees sort of all the mutant mistakes that come before
they're
her.
They're freaking creepy.
They're really, yeah, that was, I
like
mean,
the one with the
again,
really long
interesting
fingers.
Idea.
Right.
Trapped in a terrible movie.
Yeah, because each one is interesting. Like, they've got the one where, like, the mouth is on the side of
what's
the
like
face
the inside
and,
mouth?
Yeah, the inside yeah, mouth is on yeah. the side of a human face. And they have the one with the, like, super long alien fingers, but human fingers just that long. And then the one yeah. that's still alive is really creepy.
That's the one that's the most upsetting. That
yeah.
like,
because mm-hmm. she chooses to kill all the clones
yeah.
in the most inhumane way,
them.
Just burning them all
right.
together.
Yeah,
would be very painful.
That's yeah. what I said to you. Because
like, that
really?
One is still like the ones that are in the test tubes. Like we don't know if they're living or if there was were old ones that they're just keeping. And
but don't
you,
know. You take pity on the creature?
Yeah,
because
that one is like alive,
death?
Begging you to. I mean, shoot it or in the head or something. Don't just yeah. like burn it alive.
And then afterwards, we have who going like, that's a chick thing. Is it Ron Perlman?
Yeah.
I was like,
yes.
I hate
chicks
this.
Chicks are crazy,
I
man.
Hate this fucking movie. It must be a chick thing. Ugh.
Yeah.
God, damn it.
It's like, here's the thing. It's like, now that she's, like, showing the least sort of symptoms of hysteria.
Yeah.
You know, now it's a chick thing?
Mm.
Yeah.
It was demeaning without cause.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I realize he's supposed to be sort of the Hudson character, but it just kind of puts in perspective how ungross Hudson actually is
yeah.
when you compare him to Ron Perlman, which hurts me because I love Ron.
Yeah.
But he's so sad in this movie. He's so sad.
His dance? Is that why you were saying?
Yeah. His monkey dance.
Just, no. I'd rather watch The Scorpion King 3. It hurts me. Okay. So there's like, she sees her mutants. She offs them cruelly, like you said. They're heading toward, at this point, they've gone through this like water tunnel and, you know, they've been double crossed by of course, by the military scientist dude who shoots mm-hmm. Winona Ryder. At this point, everyone thinks she still thinks she's human.
Yeah.
They manage to, she ends up rescuing them, when they get trapped sort of in this room full of eggs, which is kind of a creepy, interesting mm-hmm. moment, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sliding scale, but whatever.
Yeah.
And it's sort of revealed that she is actually a synthetic, and her and Ripley have a moment, and she ends up plugging into the computer and being able to kind of get things back on track so they're going to be able to escape. And that's when, you know, that's when Ripley declares that father's dead.
Mm. Asshole.
Asshole. Take that, daddy. I don't have daddy issues.
That's right.
Not at all. And she's almost to the ship. Like, you think, you know, they're home free. And she starts rolling around on the ground like, they're so close. They're calling to me. And she
yeah.
gets dragged down
yeah.
into the pit.
Her uterus
sort of...
is wandering in
yes.
that moment. She's
sure is.
Yes. It's gone plum loco. And she falls into sort of the ambiguous alien pile.
Yeah.
That's like very orgiastic, and that
right.
slowly
envelops her.
Her.
Yeah.
And that's when you have sort of the Ripley on alien love scene.
Mm.
Oh, I just went maternal engulfment because of how I was watching this, but yeah.
Right.
Some...
Right. Sort of all of the end of Dead Alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is so much better done. In some ways, so much more
and
obvious.
Less heavy-handed.
Yes! But yeah, I mean, and this is also where Brad Dourif is sadly reintroduced as, like, you know, he's cocooned.
Right.
Explaining how...
Pretty baby. Yeah. I know, it was so bizarre. So bizarre.
Can you imagine what it must have been like on the set?
Oh, God.
Where at this point, they're now, we've met the Queen Alien, which is like this amazing villain in the second movie. And she's giving, there's like a live birth scene
of this creepy, there's humanistic alien.
Nothing I hate more in a movie
grossness.
Than a birth scene. I absolutely despise them, especially when they go on and there's the pushing and the screaming and the sweating. Like, I just feel like it's just something I hate in any kind of movie or TV show. And I always feel bad for the actor that's having to do it.
I do too.
It's so awkward because, to me.
You know what it is?
That may say more about me than it says about the
for
scenes
For me, though,
themselves.
It's like, I know that they're acting for everything they do in the movie, right? It's all an act. They're all putting it on. But for some reason, the birth scenes always seem particularly... acting.
Well, I, cause I'm putting sense. Myself like, in that place. Like, I don't want to be like, you know, he's doing all that. So, the alien scene somehow was even more offensive to me. It was just so wrong. And I don't know. It also kind of felt a little degrading a little bit that, like, they had taken this, you know, that this is the thing that they've taken from Ripley is this ability to do live birth. Like, that's almost like her value. Is that she's able to...
Oh, interesting.
But, you know, she's taken from it, like, this animalistic... And she's almost become, like, superhero Ripley, right? Mm-hmm. From the things that she's garnered from this DNA mixing.
Mm-hmm.
And this amazing gift that she passes on is the ability for live birth. That is her innate value.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'm reading into it a little too much.
That's interesting. That would be a little reductionistic if that was...
But I mean,
how they're no, not your theory, but like if they're going there, do you know what I mean?
But isn't that kind of the feeling? Did you guys get
that
at
only
all?
Thing that they need from her,
yeah,
like that's her gift. Totally. Yeah. Motherhood is her gift. You know what I mean?
Well, and yeah, she's all crazed mother at the end of this. The monster, you know, I'm the monster's mother, and
right? Yeah, you just kind of want
a less sexy way.
At that point, it's just obnoxious, and it's so. It's not what you're looking for when you watch these movies, you know?
There's, like, this weird psychosexual thing with this whole movie that is totally unnecessary. Like, you know, you go back to the first movie, and, like, it's almost, like, operating room clean. And, you know, like, it's really antiseptic, almost, to this thing. Everything's steamy and wet and sticky and gooey and wants to fuck. You know, it's just gross!
Right, and you don't have the kind of, like, thing about the scene with her and Winona Ryder and the...
Where she's, like, petting her face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after she's, you know, murderistically, like, stigmatizing herself.
Oh, what? You
know? Oh, right, with
what
the
makes
knife
you think there? I'd let you kill me? Oh, my God. No, Ripley, no! Stop it.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the Ripley I know.
But it's true,
love.
She is kind of reduced to like primal female animal by the end of this movie, and so
and
I totally see where
is,
you're going with like, yeah, that like live birth and the ability to give life is where she's...
And, well, there's this, I mean, it's so overt too. There's this whole speech that like, you know, Cocoon Brad is giving her about, you have given her this great
precious
baby. She's beautiful. Yeah. The beauty of motherhood perverted. I'm just like, ugh, everything about it made me want to slap my mama.
Yeah, he's just creepy. And the whole movie, I feel like he's like a serial rapist or something. Like, he just gives that vibe, you know? Like,
it would be the licking. Is it the licking the
I think so.
Tank,
yeah, it's just like he's just so icky and creepy. And ugh.
And then the other thing that happens in the scene is that the... Okay, so it gives birth to this, like, you know, like meat chunk pink baby thing, right?
I know,
the only non-wet thing in the movie.
Is
and
icky.
It's like, baby bird imprint. Like, it's like the freaking werewolves from Twilight.
I hated that part where it was, like, coming up to her, like, mom, mom.
Basically. I mean, like an alien baby Huey.
Yeah. Is it supposed to make my uterus wander or something? Like, am I supposed to feel, like, some sort of connection to this thing? Or, you know...
Right, like, oh, don't kill it, it's a baby.
I think so, because of the human face.
Yeah,
because
they disnified the eyes.
Yeah, and it has, like, a little nose and stuff.
But it does, like, the reverse Oedipus, where it kills off the mama alien.
Well, there's no father.
Right. Yeah. Oh, so, but it's also a female alien. Like, the thing that she's created, it's a female. I know, because I've seen the genitals. It's either the saddest penis I've ever seen, or it's female.
Well, and already has breasts.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Fully, I know, like, and that's the other thing, is it comes sort of, like, sexual, it, like, emerges from the womb sexually mature. Wow, we're really going off the rails with this episode, aren't we? Jody, how are you doing over there?
Oh, I hate this movie.
I know, you're very quiet.
Yeah, I just don't want to even think about this movie anymore, because I hadn't seen this movie for a long time, and I was building up to it, and I thought, you know what, maybe I'm being too harsh on this film, you know, maybe it won't be that bad. I was watching it this morning just going, fuck's sake, really? Come on. Yeah. It took away everything that I love about all the other movies.
Right.
And, you know, it's just this horrible version. I mean... There are a few little tiny bits where they make, like, a genuine reference to things that have happened before, and they, like, the bit where, what's the guy's name from CSI, he says... I don't
trust anyone. The guy with the dreadlocks.
He says, I don't trust anyone, and that's quoting Dallas from the first movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when the number 7 clone is going, kill me, that's from the second movie, and it's from a deleted scene from Dallas in the first movie, too. So they do make some legitimate references to the other movies, but... Oh.
It just ruins your image of Ripley, too. Like,
yeah,
that's
it is.
The main
I think
thing
maybe
that
this
me.
Movie wouldn't have been as bad if Ripley hadn't have been in it. I think I probably could have forgiven it as just a you know, straight to video rubbish knockoff, rip off of Alien, if Sigourney Weaver hadn't have been in it. But it makes it worse, the fact that she was, and that this is what they've done to her character.
Right,
because it's just such an awesome character, and to have it happen this way, like end this way, is just
and
terrible.
Who is Winona Ryder's agent? Like, how the fuck did she end up in this movie?
That's a good point.
Like, seriously, this is. I mean,
where in her arc? You would know better than me. Where in her arc is this in 97?
It's pre
like
around Girl
how
Interrupted,
to make an American Quilt or something.
Yeah, post American Quilt. And I think she keeps trying to go for these, like, movies that are supposed to, like, be her comeback movies and just choosing poorly.
And they just never happen.
Because it sucks, too, because I really like her. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she's adorable. And, I mean, she may have sticky fingers a little bit, but who cares? You know, I like whatever. I mean, she's Lydia Deetz. But oh, man.
Yeah. I really like her in Black Swan as the sort of bitter, twisted.
Yes, she's awesome there.
Yes, yeah. I forget she's in that. But yeah, she's great in that. Mm. That movie's just great. Yeah, someday we got to cover that. We really do. I got stuff to say about that movie. You seen
I do,
one?
Too. Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's a good one, isn't it?
Are you kidding? Of course I saw that.
I know, right? Also, did you see she, like, totally pulls a snake, or hear her totally pull a Snake Plissken in the movie? Like, they're like, I thought you were dead. She's like, I hear that all the time. She, like, steals his line. I was like, oh, no, you did. Now you've gone too far!
There's so many just shit lines in this. Like, I can get you off, not off the boat, though.
Right.
And I'm the monster's mother, and I get that a lot.
All right, so, So
have we said enough about
this? Well, I think we're going to talk about the very end of the film, the showdown between mother and daughter, where... Space Lump has made it onto the ship with its fleshy self. And, and there's like this whole, and this comes back to this movie is just so fluid heavy. The way that she dispatches it is through a hole in the window, but the way she creates the hole is she like flicks some blood on the window.
Yeah, with her fingers.
That made me think of the scene from Silence of the Lambs early in the film. You know what I mean?
You just went there, and now that's another
Listen, I didn't direct the movie, okay? I'm just working with what was given to me, okay?
I was still in Freud land with, like, things being forced through holes here, so I'm...
And then, yes! And then the what happens is it... you know, I mean, it's kind of cool the way she sort of, it goes inside out and goes out, you know, just from a visual perspective. I mean, it's kind of a cool way to off the baby. It's a twist on the whole being jettisoned, like every other movie that, you know, ends up with it out in space. You know, this one's like completely
destroyed.
And she's
destroyed. Kind of like, Ripley's kind of leading again by flying the plane and dealing with the hybrid. And but then she's like sad about it, right? After she kills it, isn't there a moment where
yeah,
she's
I mean, she killed her monstrous baby. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you be sad?
Duh.
And then there's, again, there's an the ending is different in the two different versions. In the version, the theatrical version, they're flying through space, and they're like, you know, there's the whole interaction between Ripley and Winona Ryder, and she's like, no, I'm a stranger here on Earth. They're going to Earth, and oh, it's so beautiful, and it's seen from space.
Yeah.
In the extended cut, they actually are on Earth, and it is, like, a total shithole. Like, it looks like nuclear. I say nuclear. I hate that. It's so bushy in of me. Nuclear sort of fall. And, like, you know you're in France? Surprise, surprise. They landed in France.
Yeah, there's, like, Eiffel Tower,
a broken Eiffel Tower. And I was saying, I wish it ended like the alternate ending of Army of Darkness, where all of the world's sort of... like monuments are all together.
Right.
Yeah. There's like the Eiffel Tower, Big Ben, Statue of Liberty. But it like totally like was the Army of Darkness ending.
Yeah, it was cheesy because they're like sitting on the rock together, looking out at it. You know, it's very cheesy. Almost like the end of a romance movie.
But I mean, and to me, it's a shitty end of the movie. But it's also like a shitty end of the franchise.
Yeah.
Like really. And this so is this, where we got to. Earth is fucked, and you're sitting on a rock with like a synthetic,
right? And now like this crappy ass version of Ripley is gonna go on living. Like that sucks.
It just seems like a like kind of like a betrayal of the Ripley character to have her end there. I mean, I guess they're trying to leave it open to sequels, but do you really want another one?
Not with that one.
Not at all.
No, if they can somehow, like, bring back the original Ripley.
If they just completely retcon it and go from end of Aliens, because she's, you know, dead in the second one, at the end of the third one, so they can't really include that one.
Yeah.
But I think it might be too late for that, unfortunately.
Or do a non-alien clone of her, you know, so that she's the real Ripley, not, like, half alien Ripley.
I feel like, though, that as much as I hate that Ripley dies at the end of the third one, I think it's a much more honest way to end that character's story.
Yeah. I could definitely be fine with the third movie just being the end of the series.
She'd been through so much, and she'd had enough.
She fought so hard. And
I would rather take the holding of the baby to her chest at the end of the third movie over, like, expanding that into the giant mess that was the fourth movie.
I would love to read the Joss Whedon screenplay to see how different it is.
That would be,
I'm guessing there's a lot more subtlety and a lot less fluids. It feels like a Frank Hinnenlotter movie. That's what it is. It's like a Frank Hinnenlotter movie, the guy that did
like brain damage
and the trilogy that we did with the lumps having sex. What is it?
Yeah.
Basket and Frankenhooker.
You're right, it is.
What, you don't know what this means when I go like this?
Oh, I'm like, what?
You know, this movie.
She's like waving her arms back and forth. I don't know what that means.
You know, this one. You know.
She's spasming and wants us to know that's Basket Case.
But it feels, I don't know, it feels like it's perverted for the sake of being... So, like, it doesn't...
Yeah, for being different and creepy and weird and for
no other
purpose.
It feels like this weird French masturbatory scene or something. I don't know. He's like, I will make this so sexy. It will drip with sexy time. No.
I like that the director sounds like Pepe Le Pew.
What? That's not what French people sound like? I can say that because they're my people. I have the immunity card on French accents. Rachel,
is that your
Chateau? I have the immunity idol. I have the immunity idol. Wait, I don't know what that accent was. All of this getting cut.
No!
All right, so Alien 4. Any final thoughts?
I'm just kind of offended that this movie was even made. I mean, because if you're going to finish your franchise by killing off your main character, that should be it.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
The third movie, that should have been it. And it would have been, you know, the third one isn't as good as the first two, but it's still pretty strong. And that would have been a satisfactory ending to the Ripley character and to the story. And then to bring it back by cloning her by blood samples that they got off that grubby planet.
Right.
You know, that just seems such a, like, you know, crowbarring this character back into the franchise to get it going again.
Just for the sake of making some more money, please. Yeah. Why did Sigourney Weaver decide to be in this movie? Like, did she not read the script and be like, "This is shit. Why am I in this?" Exactly. So why is she in
the
fourth one? Why did she agree to it?
Well, the script may have been different from what happened, though. If she did read the script,
that's true.
Yeah.
Like, I could forgive this movie a little if they said, "Oh, well, there was one more egg on the ship that they never found," and sort of bringing it back that way, because that's what they did each time, really.
Yeah, there was always some way that the alien got back in.
Yeah, and I could sort of forgive it, ish. You know, I'd still probably disregard it, but like if the Ripley character wasn't in it, and that's how they did it, I could probably forgive it, ish. You know, but.
Yeah,
I'm just really upset about what they did to this character, and yeah, like you say, I can't believe Sigourney Weaver. Like, agreed to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's a, I don't know, it just ruins the character, like, to end it this way.
And yeah.
It's such a well-known character and well-respected, and I just, I think it's really, really unfortunate that they did this.
Yeah. Well,
maybe she doesn't have the same kind of attachment to that character audience do, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it doesn't feel like a cop-out.
Well, and I think that there is kind of the burden on somebody who's made a token that at the time was, or made a character that at the time was really tokenized.
Mm-hmm. Still.
And still really tokenized. Still tokenized. Right? Like, still, like, the only of its kind. The burden on that character becomes enormous.
That's true. To have to live up to that idea.
To be the representative.
Every interview she was in was like, when are we going to get another Alien movie? When are we going to get another Alien movie? When are we going to get another one? Because, I mean, that's what I would be asking.
Well, and if people were so pissed about the third one at the time.
True.
The kind of redemption thing could have been a big draw for people to go back into this well.
And maybe she thought this would be that.
Did any of you guys see it in the theater?
I did.
You did? And what was the audience reaction?
I don't remember. Mr. Steinem wanted to remind me that I cried when the alien went out the window. But as Rachel knows, I also cried at the new Footloose. So,
this is true! Like, the bar. I looked over and you're like, I'm moved.
My crying bar is so low in any movie. Revenge of the Nerds, like, made a mess of me at the end.
Listen, you put a soundtrack behind anything. The right soundtrack, I'm like...
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that, you know, when this came out, it did work on me. Those, like, the big eyes, the big Disney eyes. With the, mommy!
I think I was too grossed out by its flesh. It was so fleshy, flesh.
No, that wouldn't have grossed me out at the time.
Really? Mm-hmm. It looked like a tumor with big eyes.
Yeah, it kind of did. It was so lumpy, its head and stuff.
Oh, that was upsetting. So, that is kind of it for, I think, for the Alien. Do you guys have some overarching thoughts about the franchise in general? Do you feel like the final film takes anything away from it, the franchise in general?
I mean, here's what I think. Like, I think, yes, it does a little bit, but I think I can do what Jody does.
Compartmentalize.
Yeah, just ignore that, put it aside, pretend it doesn't exist, and just love the first three, and especially the
Alien
first
trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I can do that and be okay. I think it's, like, really unfortunate that this movie was ever made, but,
yeah,
you know. I love it enough to ignore it.
I actually think about, I remember Jody at one point said that, like, one of her sort of litmus tests for people is to ask, what your favorite Alien film is, and if you like the first three, your first two, you're like, oh, that's good. Third one, ooh, interesting, tell me more. And the fourth one, you're like, done with them. At the time, I thought it was really funny, because, you know, like, oh yeah, that movie sucks, you must be lame. But having seen it again, and how grody it is, adds like a whole another layer of,
yeah,
I'm done with you. If that is your favorite, not only do you have bad taste, but you're kind of fucking creepy.
Yeah, I think I just like it even more. Having had this conversation and hearing about these things that I hadn't even thought of in the fourth movie, I just like it even more.
You're welcome! That's our our gift to you. Hate.
Yeah, but at least it gets people to realize how good Part 3 is, which, like, on its own, I think, if it were just three movies, I think a lot of people would say Part 3 was shit. So at least people are realizing how good it is compared to this movie.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. God, it's night and day.
Yeah.
It's night and day. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that probably Alien 3, actually, because I watched them out of order... Mm-hmm. benefited from how terrible Alien 4 was.
Yeah, because like after
that, anything that was not covered in like alien, like dripping with alien slime, and just like everything about it was gonna get like, you know, get the Colbert bump, you know what I mean? Like, so, but I think someday I'll revisit Alien 3, whereas I don't think I'll ever watch Alien 4 again.
Yeah.
I think it is, it's a wrap. Wrap. For that movie.
Yeah, I think I've seen enough of it, and I've thought enough about it, and talked enough about it.
Unless I was inflicting it on someone else, then I might watch it
again. Like if you had a bet where the loser, you got to pick something the loser could watch?
Yes, this would be a good one. Alright, so listeners, if you have a differing opinion on Resurrection...
We'd love to hear it.
I want to hear it. Break it down. School me and why this is actually great. I'm looking for that from our... I want somebody to write in and explain to me why we are, all four of us, collectively wrong about Alien Resurrection. And why that film is actually a 5-star movie. That would make my day. So if you have a different opinion, please email us. Email me at rachel@zombiegirls.com. Okay, so...
Oh, you gotta give your Netflix pick. Oh.
Boom. Me. But thanks for the segue. Speaking of movies we watched yesterday.
Awkward.
I have a Netflix streaming pick.
Okay.
Are you guys ready for that?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. All right. So this episode's so I love how like optimistic I am. This hour's. Might as well. Okay. And I'll read you the synopsis from Netflix, because I'm lazy and I already did 2 synopsises today. All right. Really poorly on the second one, by the way. Grave Encounters. In this horror flick, the stars of a paranormal investigation TV show spend the night in a derelict psychiatric hospital, hoping to uncover what's been going bump in the night. As their cameras roll, they find themselves trapped and hunted. Okay. Do you like my dramatic reading?
I want you to read that line on Netflix.
This movie is scary. Also, okay, so basically the plot of the movie is it's one of those, like, you know, ghost hunters type shows, found footage. But the sort of, like, the conceit of this movie is these ghost hunters who are, you know, skeptics. They're just kind of in it to, you know, cash in on this craze. Find what they were looking for, and it has some pretty bad results.
Yeah.
So it's very low budget, it's found footage, so of course you know how it's gonna end. Now they all end, but along the way there's actually some interesting ideas and a few pretty good scares. Mm-hmm. They get the atmosphere right, the setting is really creepy, and I kind of get the feeling that they stole some ideas from Cropsey. So you having seen that documentary, like, I feel like maybe that even added a little bit to it. Has some flaws to it. It runs a little bit too long. I think they could have excised about 15 minutes from the runtime.
Agreed.
Made it a lot tighter and a lot better. But that being said, it's the perfect kind of thing to find on Netflix streaming. If you go into it with sort of realistic expectations, it's actually a pretty good sort of direct
video. Yeah, and so much better than a lot of the horror movies I end up watching on Netflix. So, you know, it's like, it had a lot of like the monster creature things, ghosts, whatever, you know, they were cool looking and scary. I think not all of the jump scares were like especially effective because some of the pacing was off a little bit, but overall it was a really good movie, especially for a free Netflix streaming.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay, one of the things I think I liked about this is it reminded me a little bit of like when I was younger in high school and stuff, and you would go to creepy places. Am I the only one that had this experience?
Well, I keep telling you that
you lived in Oakland, and, like, the scary places where you were, like, actually, like, scary and full of real live people.
Yeah.
They're scary for different reasons.
Yeah. did you have that experience?
Oh, sure.
Like, you went to, like, ghost abandoned places?
See, that seems cool to me. Yeah. I wish I got to do that, because...
you, Jody? Did you growing up? Did you have that kind of like where you go out somewhere creepy?
Not really. I would have been too scared anyway.
Really?
Yeah. I'm really a wuss. I mean, all this stuff that I watch, I mean, it's fine, but real things and computer games, no, I'm too scared for that kind of thing.
Interesting. Because see, you're like the toughie on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm the wimp. I'm like notoriously wimpy. Like, the first time I've ever, this time when I watched this is the first time I've ever watched the alien come out of John Hurt's chest. I was covered by ice. But I made myself watch, and then it wasn't that bad. So I would think that you would be like the leading the pack.
Well, I don't know, because with movies it's kind of under your control, but
yeah,
real
I can
life
see
things.
That.
No, I'm too scared.
Yeah, I never got to have that experience. I think that sounds fun. But...
Well, in my little town that I grew up, like I grew up in wine country. You know what I mean? So there's like all these back roads and stuff, and out past the Winty Winery is the current VA, like the current Veterans Hospital. But if you keep going past that, there's the site of the old VA. It's since been torn down. But there was a Veterans Hospital up there that was also formerly a tuberculosis ward. And then there was satellite housing. And so we would, you know, get drunk. You know, the boys would get us drunk and take us to the old VA. And we'd cruise around looking around at all the creepy stuff. And there was like one house that someone had ripped all the floorboards out. And there was like stairs that had been cemented in. And we were like, what are they hiding under the cement? You know? And like, there was like one that had a room you couldn't get into. And we're like, what's in the room? And someone had like written like 666 on the walls and stuff. So we were like, oh, devil worship. Scary. And I, you know, had been indoctrinated. So
yes.
I was like,
oh, right.
So like that shit was legit to me. Like I believed that if you threw a Ouija board in the fireplace, it would scream. You know, like so when I saw 666 stuff, I was like, get me out of here. But then I kept going back. So what do you know? Except I refused to get out of the car on Halloween. Like yeah, I wouldn't get out of the car. I was too scared on Halloween because that's the devil's day. What am I crazy?
Duh.
No, like, abandoned... past blue ribbon was going to lure me out.
There was a big abandoned VA in Oakland that they tore down recently up on the hill that I had gone by. That was like it was a Navy hospital.
Ooh, spooky.
And it was completely overgrown. And it looked cool and creepy, except the day that I went, and this is a couple years ago, the creepiness was mediated by the fact that, one, it was noon, and two, they had the guy in Oakland who... I don't know if you've seen this weed abatement program in the East Bay that he has a herd of miniature goats that he brings around to eat all the weed. So yeah. It was surrounded by mini goats.
It's pretty awesome.
Oh, I guess that's true. They are.
When I was in Scotland, we went to the Battle of Culloden field thing. And there's like tons of freaking goats out there. But they were like mutant goats with like extra horns. And it was so creepy.
Really?
Yes! No. I was just like, what is happening? Are they feasting on the souls of the dead Scotsmen? What is happening?
No, I was in high... When I was younger, I was kind of a death rock girl, so you just went to the cemetery because you were on a date.
You were like the real-life version of trash.
Yes.
Awesome! Well, I mean, only without the merkin and the naked. But I mean, the kicking it in the cemetery. Okay, that's where it ends.
The kicking it in the cemetery.
You didn't have a cat's wig on.
There was a level of machismo about kicking it in the cemetery, I'm going to say. Yeah.
I think I probably hit up the occasional cemetery. I don't know. I liked scary stuff when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
I know. Shocking. Now.
Yes.
But I'm such a wimp, though. At the same time, I'm such a wimp. So in the same way that I suffer for loving horror movies... I suffered. I mean, I was miserable, but I kept being, like, drawn back. Like, I would be like, yeah, let's go there. I'm so fucking scared.
Really?
Yeah. I think I just, like, that's my thrill. I get off on getting scared. I do. I love it. All right, ladies. I think that's probably it. We've
covered it all.
All right, so that's it for the Alien franchise and...
Celebrating Ripley.
Celebrating Ripley. Send us... feedback. We love feedback. We don't have any feedback right now. Feeling a little alone on Zombie Girl Island. So
help us out.
Yeah, send me
Make
an email at Rachel.
Lonely.
Yeah, send me an email at rachel@zombiegirls.com. You can leave us a voicemail or you can follow me on Twitter. My name's @RachiePants. I don't know why I picked that name, but I did. So
with an IE or with a Y?
IE, baby. I was going to make a really bad joke, but I'm just going to let it go. So that's it for episode 24. Thank you everyone for listening. And thank you to my wonderful, lovely co-host for joining me. I had so much fun chatting with you today.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yay. All right.
Bye everyone.
Bye. What has two thumbs, a tongue, one eye, and fucks like a god? Do you remember that? Was that in the...
That wasn't in my version. No.
Oh, no! Okay, it's like early in the movie, and it's the guy in the wheelchair to Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
And this is his answer.
Okay, you just like... Oh. We're on radio, basically.
I know! I'm showing Matilda! That's what
Let my groan
for.
Of disgust
yes.
be illustrative of what Rachel's doing.
Yeah. Where's... Hold on. I want to show you guys the picture of the genital. All right. Let me forward this. Oh, Jody, so she can appreciate it too.
Thank you.
Because it's just unfair that you miss the...
Has anybody been on the alien ride that they have in the U.S.? Has anybody been on
No, but that sounds awesome.
There was some alien ride for a while that people
like
said was pretty
Studios
great.
Or
yeah,
something?
That Geiger, that was all the big Geiger creatures. So
that would be cool.
Okay, so I'm sending this to you. I just emailed it to you because it's on my phone.
Thank you.
And this is in the email titled "Aliens and Feminists." I don't want to look at it again. It upsets me. Also, by the way, I was trying to find that picture to send you, and there's so much upsetting, like art where there's like lots of women being like penetrated vaginally by facehuggers.
Oh no.
Really?
Yeah, like if you Google that, like if you Google xenomorphs and genitals.
Yeah, she was like looking for the photo for me last night, and every 2 seconds she'd be like, oh god, no, my eyes.
And you think about how long it takes to draw a picture that someone dedicated that time to a bunch of women with their like pants around their ankles and facehuggers in their crotches. Is
disturbing. Yeah.
Well, this is not just a vagina. Is the first thing I would say.
I know. That's what I was gonna say. It almost looks
this
like
is
a
this is the overly
thing.
Explicit.
Is it like hermaphroditic?
Yeah. Like what in one or two should be is the kind of subtext of like these are women that don't need men to reproduce. Mm-hmm. Like here we
Got
have
it.
A giant over share.
That is an overshare, isn't it? You're right. I think it is, and those would be testicles right there.
Yeah.
Oh, or those are like or her the butt. Sacrum bones. Yeah,
I still find this very upsetting.
It is really it's gross. And that head is just so icky. Too.
It is not
and those little boobs
meant to be in. It is the only thing you see when you look at that.
Yeah,
creature.
Well, and because of the coloring too. It's like your eyes go.
Did you get the email?
Do you see it?
Any thoughts?
Yeah, great. That's hard.
As usual, and you sum it up succinctly. Bravo, Explody. Bravo. Oh my goodness. All right, that's it. Burn it. Burn them. Gather all the copies of Resurrection and burn them. But yeah, we were all like, my cats were like, at, like every 5 minutes they would like try to get on my lap and then they would like scurry away because I was like,
And the cat would go, like, flailing across the room.
God, I can only imagine what it must sound like to hear when I talk about my cats. They must think I'm just, like, dripping in cats. I have three.
Like, you're, like, the alien resurrection of
Yes! I drip kitties! Peace out.